It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. What a great panel we have for you. The 8th fastest Super Mario speedrunner in the world is here. She'll do a little demo. Brianna Wu, Paris Martineau from The Information, and Colonel Matt Cutts, Administrator of the United States Digital Service. It's all coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 782, recorded Sunday, August 2nd, 2020. Mainframes, not Mary Jane. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Monday.com. Monday.com is a flexible platform to manage any team, project, or workflow online. Collaborate, plan, and track everything your team is working on, wherever you are. To start your free 14-day trial, go to Monday.com/twit. And by Stamps.com. Anything you could do at the post office, you could do at Stamps.com. For a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment, go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and enter the code TWIT. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by Barracuda. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at Barracuda.com/twit. It's time for This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news, and I thought this would be a good week to bring in some smart folks with political savvy like former congressional candidate, game designer, space cat gal, Brianna Wu.
Everybody, it's good to be here.
Hey, great to see you. You took down the American flag.
I thought I'd set up a real office, so there it is. I'm a professional person, Leo.
Yes.
Got to put forward the good image.
And she's no longer a member of the empire. She is in the rebellion.
That's true.
But we can't talk about it. We could just...
That's right.
Just title
the secret rebellion.
Secret.
Well, last time we were here, I said I was thinking about starting a technology-focused political action committee, and that is part of what I'm doing. But
nice.
Can't tell you about it yet.
It's not yet public, but we thought we'd use the lower third anyway.
There we go.
And let people guess. Also here, Paris Martineau, who's also gone through a job change recently. She's now, I'm very happy to say, at one of the best technology publications in the world, The Information. Reporter there. Great to see you in your attic.
Yeah, great to be here.
Thank you. Love the attic.
I got a 30-foot Ethernet cord specifically so that I can have Zoom meetings up here.
Bless you. Oh, not just for us, in general.
I mean, partially for you guys, but also for other audio, video things.
Nice. So there's a long blue cable going up the stairs?
It is, yeah. My cat loves to mess with it.
Okay. Well, we'll know what happened if you suddenly disappear. Kitty got into the cable. Also here, really.
It's zip-tied.
Oh, it's zip-tied. Ooh, fancy. That's kind of a semi-permanent installation. That's good. That's serious. Also here, really pleased to welcome back Matt Cutts, a dear friend. Back from the days when he was one of the first Googlers, he was the man in charge of fighting spam sites. He left Google and has found his way to the United States Digital Service, the USDS, where he is now no longer acting, but the actual administrator. Hi, Matt. Good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. It's hard to believe I've been in government for 4 years now.
Wow. You don't look changed at all.
Just a little more gray.
Just a little more gray, but that happens. I've seen that happen.
Turn your head around. There's a second head back there.
Yes, that's exactly right.
We'll talk more later in the show about the USDS, but it's really a great organization helping to streamline government. You've done great work for the Veterans Administration, and you're actually really on the front lines now because a lot of states are having trouble with their unemployment systems, which can't keep up with the massive unemployment. And what you're doing, you're working with New Jersey? Is that what it was I heard?
Yeah, working with New Jersey and fingers crossed for the Department of Labor. We'll see how that goes.
Fantastic. That's what the U.S. Digital Service is all about. That's what it was created to do. So really great to have you on the show. We'll talk more about the USDS. And when Matt comes on, I know he's only here really for one thing, and that's to get you. He wants you to join the United States Digital Service.
That is 100%. No, I love to see you, Leo. Don't get me wrong. I will happily talk for as long as the show goes on, but also I would love for designers, engineers, and product managers to apply nice. And come help in government.
Absolutely. Actually, let's talk a little bit about TikTok today. I performed this morning an act of rebellion. I downloaded and installed TikTok on my iPhone because who knows how much longer I'll be able to do it. It's very confusing. I don't know what's going on. TikTok, which is owned by the Chinese company ByteDance. CFIUS, the Committee for Foreign Investment in the United States, apparently is investigating. I think they actually issued a ruling saying that like Huawei, TikTok was a threat to the United States. One of the ways TikTok became really big is by acquiring a couple of years ago Musical.ly, which is really kind of, I think from what I see on TikTok, kind of the backbone of what TikTok is these days, which is lip syncing or acting or dancing to an original track. It's very entertaining. It's probably the most engaging social network out there, but apparently, it's a threat to our way of life. On Friday, the president on Air Force One said that he was about to ban it as soon as yesterday from the United States. I'm not sure under what law. CFIUS could do it, I think, but I don't know if the president can, by executive order, ban an application. Then, for the last week, Microsoft's been negotiating to buy the American rights to TikTok to kind of create a TikTok America that would be separate from the Chinese ByteDance TikTok. But then the president says, I'm going to ban it, but I don't want anybody to buy it. Ugh. So Microsoft said, Microsoft threw their hands up and said, figure it out. And they didn't end the conversation with ByteDance. Apparently, they were fairly close, but they're not forwarding it until they find out what happens. I'm going to make a prediction. Nothing is going to happen, except now more people are going to download and use TikTok. Yeah. Brianna, is TikTok a threat to national security?
It's not a unique threat to national security. We need to have a conversation about the kinds of information social media apps are able to download from our phones. We all remember the scandals of Facebook on Android, downloading your entire phone list and getting everyone you've ever called. We need to have a conversation about that. But there's really no evidence that what TikTok is pulling is any greater than what Facebook, Instagram, these other social media sites are pulling so far. So we need a wider discussion about that. I also just want to say, I wish I could tell you this was just Trump and the Republicans. That would make me very happy. My heart broke today to see Chuck Schumer on the Sunday morning shows advocating the same thing with TikTok. So, we need to have a conversation about national security and the amount of information we're giving up. But it's, I think, racist to just focus on TikTok.
Sinophobia or xenophobia. Paris, you seem like a TikTok user. That's only because you're younger than I am.
Posted on TikTok. But I did recently re-download it when this whole kerfuffle happened.
Right.
So I wanted to make sure that I had it.
Exactly.
Which I'm sure is a common response. I agree with everything that Brianna just said in the sense that, I don't know, I've been particularly disturbed by the reactions to TikTok's data collection, both from the left and right and just experts in the tech field generally over the past couple of months, because it is definitely coming from a place of xenophobia. I mean, we have so many different American-made apps that do many of the same things. I mean, one thing that I've seen noted quite often is, oh, TikTok has the ability to see what you've, you know, copied in your clipboard. I'm like, yes, so do most of the apps you have on your phone. This is a problem. It's not a TikTok-specific problem.
This came up because of iOS 14, which is in public beta now, so people are suddenly using it. And dozens of applications. I think it must be a library that they all subscribe to. In fact, somebody a couple of weeks ago, somebody told me that it was a Google ad library. I use a clearly non-invasive program from Panic Software called Code Editor, which lets me log into my server with SSH and edit files and things like that. And it was, I got the same thing that you get on iOS 14. Oh, Code Editor's looking at your clipboard every time I typed a character. Now, I don't think Panic Software, famous for an FTP program and an SSH program, is at spying on me. Obviously, they're not. They're using the same code library. So it's a bug. That's what Microsoft's LinkedIn said as well. So
I think it's also just one of those things where if you're building an app, especially in the time, I don't know, there was a time when apps and stuff were being built where there wasn't this conversation about security and privacy. Why would app designers not take the position of, yeah, let's get all the things. Maybe we'll need that information
TikTok
at some
said,
point.
TikTok said, quite credibly, well, we're just looking to see if you put a URL on your clipboard so we can paste it in.
Right.
That seems credible. I don't know if you need to do it every single time I type a character. That seems like more than a bug.
I can tell you firsthand from developing on iOS, it's often easiest just to get it submitted to the App Store to take a bunch of permissions. Yeah. And it's like you're trying to debug it and get the App Store to accept it. It's just quirky. I cannot tell you how many times I and other app developers have just... It's a very, very quirky system. So I think this is just in beta. I also think it's really important to point out, as far as the impetus for this, I personally do not think it's a coincidence that TikTok was widely credited for disrupting Trump's Tulsa rally a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, Sarah Cooper is so famous for making fun.
She's a TikTok star. Yeah.
She's amazing. Yeah. And those videos are brutal to Trump. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
She does Trump lip sync. And I was talking to a friend who said, you know, I see Trump on TV. I can't understand what he's saying. But then I watch Sarah Cooper, and that makes sense because Sarah adds expressions and gestures, and it all kind of makes sense all of a sudden. So I don't think the president should be so quick to not like Sarah Cooper. She's adding context. I do think that might have something to do with it, certainly in his mind, because we know, I don't know what he's going to do to K-pop stans, because they were the other group that apparently figured out that you could register for tickets.
I think somebody on Trump's team has got to be wise enough to know you can't take on the K-pop stans. I mean, you can try to take down TikTok, but if you went against the K-pop stans, the United States would crumble.
Yes, it would be over, right? You just can't win against the K-pop stans. So they were both advocating people sign up for the Tulsa rally and not show. And honestly, the fault lies with Brad Parscale, Trump's former campaign manager, and his campaign team for believing all those registrations and building a giant outdoor stage and a giant parking lot so that the millions of people who are going to be coming, because they all registered, would have somewhere to be. And then I shouldn't say that. That sounds partisan. It was interesting to see the one person with the baby stroller in that giant area and the rest of the arena half full or a third full. So I could see why he might be a little angry about that. Right. Is there, though, Matt, and I'm not putting you in the position of speaking for the government. I want to say that. In fact, we should have said that up front.
Thank you.
Matt does not speak for the USDS or the federal government. But you also, though, having worked at Google, you understand how, you know, a little bit of how this stuff works. There's not any proof that Huawei, for instance, ever done anything particularly evil. They've done some commercial espionage, apparently, but nothing particularly evil. But there's the potential, if they run the entire 5G network, that at some point they could inject malicious software into the network or shut it down. Is what could TikTok, even this even sounds stupid asking it, what could TikTok do?
it's the forbidden app. It's like Flappy Bird. And if you think about it, if you don't have it on your phone, it could disappear at any time. No, I think it's less about that. Although you do see companies like Amazon saying, hey, on your work phone or work device, please don't install
well,
this.
Well, so Amazon did it and then undid it.
That back.
Yeah, because they realized, oh, we do a lot of business with these guys. Let's not piss them off. But Wells Fargo did that. I think the Department of Defense, I don't know about USDS, but it's reasonable. If you've got a company phone, you probably shouldn't have Facebook or Instagram on it either.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I keep my Twitter and all that stuff very far away from my work phone. It's my personal account. But, you know, I can understand why people want to have just a sense of, okay, let's be careful. Let's see what's going on. And then, you know, just making sure that you can depend on the tools all the way down, you know, reflections on trusting trust. You can put things into a compiler, which then you can remove it from the source code. And turns out that thing can stay in the compiler for years and years and years. So, you know, you don't want to be load bearing on any particular technology that you can't quite vouch for is my guess what people are thinking.
Brianna, what would be the legal, how could a president ban an app in the United States?
I was thinking about this, and you know, one thing the United States government is very effective at is we went after ISIS and ISIL in a very effective way and said, you know, this IP address to a recruitment site, you can't access it. So my guess would be the executive order would basically go after the ISPs and say you can't go to this particular ISP. But think about that. I know VPN products have sponsored your show. They've sponsored mine, and do you know how few seconds it would take the average teenager to get a VPN account to just keep their TikTok going.
Yeah. I will say, yesterday I downloaded the TikTok app. The first video that came up, because I had to create a new account because I forgot my previous password, was if TikTok gets banned, here's how to get around it. You don't even need a VPN. You can go into the settings of your phone, change your country of origin to Canada, and then you're great.
See, exactly. I mean, it's not enforceable, basically. So, I mean, one thing, like Leo, I think Matt and I would probably agree that we do need to, I don't know if it's more oversight from the point of sale, like on the App Store or Google Play. I don't know if it's kind of an external code audit policy for these kinds of apps when they're owned by other countries. I think we agree we need more oversight, and we need to make sure all of these are not stealing data from people. And just to give people a very brief history lesson, you know, Edward Snowden had some very serious allegations about our own spying agencies using Facebook to gather intelligence on people all around the world. There's evidence for that. There's no hard evidence at this point that TikTok is doing any of this. So if we're serious about doing this, the answer isn't to further balkanize the United States from the rest of the world. The answer is to form more coalitions with other countries. Say, look, if you're going to operate here, and you know, if you're going to have this software operating in our country, here are the rules you have to follow. You can't just arbitrarily download people's phone books, or there's going to be you know, civil fines. That's clearly the way to go. It's got to be bigger than just TikTok.
I'm just looking at TikTok on my iPhone. It has access to my photos because I gave it access to my photos so I could put a profile picture on there. It gives me notifications. I could turn that off. That's a push, though. That's not a pull. Background app refresh means it can run in the background. And cellular data doesn't ask for location data. It doesn't ask for, I mean, Facebook asks for 10 times more. That's why I don't have it on my phone. The worst thing TikTok does is waste millions of hours of productivity. And maybe that's a reason to ban it. I don't know. But I don't understand how it could be used. If it's not getting location permissions, how could it be used maliciously?
Yeah, I think it is getting location permissions in some way. Because I know that I've know anecdotally, at least from a couple of friends, whenever they, let's say, go to Connecticut to visit family or something, they will suddenly get Connecticut themed TikTok content or something similar.
Okay.
But I mean, that could just be from
IP like
your
address.
Wi-Fi connection.
You can get that from the IP address. So I guess they could get geolocation through IP address without asking app, without telling Apple that they're doing that. That would make sense. Okay, so they're getting that one.
But every app can do that also.
Yeah, every app can and probably, I hate to say it, probably does do that.
Yeah.
Your phone is a spy device. It's like the, it's like, it's the best possible, it's got a camera and a, mine has four
cameras.
This is
my issue with all the, well, I mean, among many issues with the conspiracy theories about, oh, whenever there's a COVID vaccine, it's going to be used to microchip us. I'm like, you carry around.
You don't need to be microchipped.
Device willingly and upgraded every year.
You can't handle the truth. And TikTok is at great pains, really. They're trying to appease the U.S. government. They've announced they're going to hire 10,000 Americans. That always seems to be good for relationships with the White House. They have done something that nobody else will do. They say, we want to reveal our algorithm. Because there's been some criticism of TikTok's algorithm that perhaps it downgrades people. Because the algorithm is key to TikTok. The whole key, by the way, key to Facebook and YouTube, too. The whole key is... you get a million people to submit videos, and then algorithmically, based on how many people are looking, how much engagement, you bring up the best videos. It's a brilliant concept. You know, you don't.
And it's unique and very different from other social media apps in that it's not specifically follower based. Like the content that you're going to be getting in your feed when you open TikTok, even with no app, you're going to be getting content produced from hundreds of other people that are both TikTok stars, verified, as well as, you know, like no-name people that I think you might be interested in. You don't have to follow certain accounts in order to get content.
TikTok works really well. You could make the algorithm, you can make the argument that YouTube's algorithm encourages terrorism, but I don't think that's a problem on TikTok. and you could argue that maybe Facebook's algorithm starts feeding you all sorts of weird political stuff, but you, I mean, I don't think you can argue that with TikTok. And they're going to, they say they want to reveal how their algorithm works. In fact, their chief executive, Kevin Mayer, said, and we call on Facebook and Google, Amazon and Apple to do the same. Is Matt, that, and from your time in Google, that's kind of the secret sauce.
Yes, the algorithms are the secret sauce, but I can believe that TikTok's algorithms, you could probably do a pretty good approximation in like 1,000 lines of code. You know, you're looking for engagement, you're looking for growth, you're looking at the first derivative. Like it's going to be pretty simple. You might tweak based on whether somebody's verified or how many followers they have, but you know, once you have enough critical mass, once you get the network effect, then the content is flowing in on its own, and the algorithm itself for TikTok at least doesn't need to be, you know, that complex. Whereas the algorithms that run searching the entire web, you know, or the sorts of things that Apple might use or Amazon might use for distribution, those sorts, you know, that is a lot more complex probably.
And more proprietary, more, you know, you're right. I mean, I think anybody, if you think about it, could figure out how to surface the best videos on TikTok. You're getting all these signals. People are giving them to you.
Do you think Twitter is just killing themselves for having canceled Vine? Because it's a practically identical product.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, you see them having invested money in it. And it's I don't know. It's just, I root for Twitter. You
what
know?
Happened with Vine is Twitter got greedy.
Yeah.
The Vine stars came to them and said, look, we're making your platform. You need to give us some.
Yeah.
And Twitter said, under no circumstances. The Vine star said, see ya. Sorry.
Bye.
Bye ya.
It's also funny that at least, you know, before Twitter, the folks who did Twitter were at Google, and Google was like slapping their head like, oh, why did we let Twitter get away? And now Twitter must be like, why did we let Vine get away?
That takes us to the historic Wednesday testimony of Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Tim Apple, and Sundar Pichai via WebEx before the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Antitrust. We're going to take
the committee wore my hat, which I made from the last committee, which says, Senator, we run an ad.
Wow. Wow, that's awesome. A pink ball
cap. I came up
cap.
With another couple of hat ideas from this hearing, which I put out for my Twitter followers to vote on, and I've got a new one coming. It's going to be really good.
This is so brilliant. This is so good, Paris.
It's really... I love it so much. It's been multiple years, and yet I still wear it to the store often, and people will be like, hey...
That comes from the now infamous question. Which senator was it? I don't remember. Who asked Mark Zuckerberg, how do you make money?
Yeah, the question was like, oh, but Facebook is free. How do you make money? And there was just a long pause, and Zuckerberg was like, senator, we run ads.
Oh, great. That was it was almost as good on Wednesday when, what's his name?
Was it Jordan?
No, no, Jim Jordan was wild.
Oh.
No, it's the ranking Republican on the committee said, we started asking him about why Facebook had blocked Donald Trump Jr. for his COVID video. And Mark Zuckerberg says, well, I can answer your question, but that was Twitter.
Right. Yeah, I believe the full quote was, Congressman, I believe that happened on Twitter, which I had
that'd wanted be a good hat
that as well.
Might
but
be too long.
It's too big for the hat.
Yeah.
It's like a drinking game, by the way. Every time Zuckerberg, before he says anything, he pauses. He goes, Senator, Congressman, Congresswoman. And it's just, it's so obvious he's been coached and he's trying to run out the clock because there's that long pause. But I have to say, look, I realize that the temptation is to be cynical and snarky about this. And don't get me wrong, there was plenty of grandstanding in this hearing. I was just horrified how many people, elected officials got up there and did their own grandstanding with a monologue about something unrelated to the issue at hand. But at its core, I was very impressed and happy with the amount of work in antitrust that the committee had done and the document research and the amount of discovery that they put in front of the American people.
In fact, we
I thought they did an excellent job.
A lot. And these companies have a lot to answer for. We're going to get to that in just a little bit. Yep. I expected that because, A, this is the subcommittee on antitrust. This is their topic, right? They own this topic. And B, it's members of Congress as opposed to senators. And I feel like they're maybe a little bit more in touch. Maybe not a lot, but a little bit more in touch with what's going on. Let's take a little break. By the way, these are your hat choices, Paris, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Mr. Bezos, I believe you're on mute. Wow, I missed that one. That's good. And a nuanced destruction machine. What's that? Who said that?
That was a quote from Bezos, where I believe he described social media as a nuanced destruction machine. And that was his like sign off line.
That's pretty apt, actually.
That's true.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Quite accurate.
Or outrage engine. Or, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Or high school all over again. let's take a little break and we will come back. What a panel. This couldn't be a better panel for the topics at hand today. Paris Martineau, newly minted reporter at The Information. Wonderful to see you. I thought we might not ever see you again. I'm so glad.
Always wonderful to be here.
Dark.
Dark. And
well,
I'm glad I'm employed.
Not see you again. I mean, I know you would be around, but we wouldn't get you on our airs. Brianna Wu, I knew we would never get rid of you, so that's good.
Right. I'm here.
We count on you. And Matt Cutts, of course, it's always a pleasure. U.S. Digital Service, he is the administrator. Our show today brought to you by Monday.com. We found a new way of organizing our show prep, our ideas. It's hard when team members are working from home. You can't have the stand-ups. You can't have the meetings. You can't just lean over a partition and say, what are you working on? You need a centralized place that you can let your team plan and track and manage and get things done and know where everybody is. And this is Monday.com. And it doesn't matter whether you work with a team of 5 people or 5,000 people. It really is the best way to keep people connected and on track. It's a project management platform that is designed to make effective teamwork possible no matter where the team is. And even after COVID, we're going to go back to work and teams will still be distributed all over the world. That's just the way work's going to be from now on. But you can at least keep their work in one place. Bring them together. You have a single page of truth. You can plan, track, and manage your business. One easy-to-use platform. Now, I know the first reaction I always have is, but I already have a platform. I don't want to give it up. Monday.com works with all the platforms you already work with. It integrates all of your existing tools. So we use Google Sheets. We use Slack. We use Zoom. It works with email. It works with your calendar. It can all integrate in. In fact, it automatically does that. So now instead of having 50 different places to look to see how you're doing, you've got one great dashboard. And you can set it up however you like, a Gantt chart, a timeline. We like Kanban boards. You could do tables like spreadsheets. Monday.com has almost any possible way of looking at your data. In fact, one of the great things is once the data is in there, you can look at it in a variety of ways, whatever way makes sense for the information you're trying to understand. It really helps with coordination across teams and departments. You can easily track and manage work so that you always know who's doing what, when. That's really important. In fact, really, honestly, even when we get back to work, the thing I'm going to love about Monday.com is no more meetings, no more check-in meetings. You don't have to anymore. What are you working on? Where does it stand? When's it going to be done? All of that's right there in front of you, always up to date in real time. And that's done also with no-code automations. So you don't have to write the code, but you can easily put that workflow on autopilot. Alerts, project flows, all work automatically. Your productivity goes up, your efficiency goes up, transparency improves, and that's important with collaboration. And if you're a company, and you ought to be, that makes data-driven decisions, Monday.com is for you. You can track progress, timelines, budgets. You'll be making your key decisions based on real-time data, constantly up to date, no more guessing. This is an amazing way, whether you're organizing podcasts like we do, or organizing a giant business or a production workflow or a project, a coding project you're working on. It's perfect. It's perfect. Eddie did a great job. That's another thing I love. So I've been using Monday.com for a couple of years, but when you sign up for Monday.com, you can get an onboarding specialist to work with you. And Eddie sat down and he's a wizard with this stuff. He said, oh, here's another thing you could do. And it's awesome. 100,000 teams are already getting things done with Monday.com. You could be one of them. Change the way you work online. Let Monday.com take care of what slows you down and free up time to focus on the work that drives you. Start your free 14-day trial right now. Monday.com/twit. Monday.com/twit. I thank Monday.com for helping us get our life in order, get our work in order, and I encourage you to try it. Thank you for supporting the show by going to Monday.com/twit. Mr. Bezos, I vote for Mr. Bezos. I believe you're on mute.
Yeah, that was what the people eventually chose, I think.
This is a new thing. One. You could do the hats. You could be the, oh, she's that hat person. That could be your thing. Do that on TikTok.
Could be. I don't know. Got to keep the hats for myself. The hat, I don't know. A couple of people have messaged me being like, oh, can I get in? Are you selling these hats? And I don't want to be the person that sells hats.
No.
I want to be the person that has.
That's it.
The best hat.
Let them make their own if they're so smart.
It's really not very hard.
Do you have a recommendation for where to go to get hat made?
Yeah, I like Printful.
Printful. Okay.
If you want embroidered hats, Printful. Which I think looks better if you're doing just text.
Printful. Okay.
Yeah, we are pricing out hats on Rocket because Christina is seriously thinking about bidding $500 on those Fire Festival.
Oh, my God.
All the Fire Festival hats. Stuff's going on sale.
Right, it's seized by the
U.S.
Marshals.
I love that it's underneath like a fraud label.
Right. It's amazing. And we're like, Christina, we will get you your own hat. Like, that's an achievable dream. Oh, don't spend $500.
No, but
that.
It'd be so awesome to have an actual Fire Festival sweatpants.
Would it be $500 worth of awesome?
It's probably going to go for like $800 or $900, though.
Well, let me see. Really? So it's an auction?
Yeah.
If you make a fake Fire Festival swag, like, who's going to sue you?
That's double fraud. That's fraud about the fraud.
No, it's ironic fraud. That's
ironic fraud. Right. That's okay.
A different thing.
Yeah. It's like two frauds do make a right.
We were going to put a little rocket ship going around the fire at the top, and it was going to be technically a hat about Rocket's coverage of Fire Festival, of which we did a lot. So that was... We'll see if it holds up in court.
Actually, now that I'm here, This U.S. Marshals Service National Online Auction is a treasure trove.
Oh, man.
A treasure trove of confiscated. Well, look, you, for $35, you can get the rubber red wristband that says, what is it, conspiracy to change the world?
Oh.
That should have been an early warning sign.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, Leo, have you ever heard of GSAauctions.gov?
Oh, you may have me now.
If you want to buy a helicopter, GSAauctions.gov is
cheap.
Here to suit your needs.
Everything as is, though. Wow, look
at
this.
Sure.
I can get a 1996 pulverizer real cheap.
Okay, hear me out on this, Leo.
Yeah.
You get that. You sign up for an account here. You get the pulverizer. You get the helicopter. And then you start a TikTok. And you do all,
all the crap I bought at the GSA TikTok. Auctions. Look at this. Look at this. This is a glass pulverizer, a mere $200. All I need is some glass, and I could pulverize it.
So I don't know if you look. If you go to GSAauctions.gov,
okay,
sometimes it redirects you.
No, I'm here.
So the URL
category
is
GSA. On GSA auctions for space shuttle / Hubble. It doesn't have anything in it right now, but does that mean at
you
some
could get
point
an old
they
space
would genuinely
shuttle.
Sell you a NASA shuttle / Hubble?
Wow.
The government has a lot of stuff. And Leo, the URL might be gsaauctions.gov/gsaauctions/gsaauctions. I don't know if you noticed that. That's just like government. Mwah, so good.
I take it the U.S. Digital Service did not design this website.
We did not help with this one.
Look, I can get crutches and bariatric rollators for $10.
Wow. Condition is not warranted in all caps.
Well, who did they confiscate these from? I just want to know. Like, is there somebody hobbling around because they took my crutches? That's terrible. All right, GSA, the government's, what is it, Government Service Administration? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Auctions.
Or General Services Administration.
General Services. By the way, they're a govsales.gov partner. Now I got to go to govsales.gov.
That rabbit hole goes deep. I don't know if you want to go all the way down there.
There's the Blackhawk.
Oh, Blackhawk.
$500,000. Reserve not
zero
met.
Bidders.
Yeah, I'm in for $25. Can you get the rest?
Well, I need you because you're the one who's going to get it working.
There we go.
Defects may exist.
Everybody contribute $100. We can all go in a helicopter.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could start a new business flying people around Napa Valley.
You can buy land on this website.
Oh my God.
That's beautiful.
Matt, that's a great deal. On a Blackhawk. Yeah. This one's down, but but not out. Okay. Wow. Do you have to go to Huntsville to get it?
I would go to Huntsville to get a Blackhawk helicopter.
You could fly it back.
That's true.
Oh, that's true.
Oh.
It's big enough you could probably carry your car back with it. Just sling it underneath. Jeez. Oh, there's a lot of stuff here. This is
one
good.
Of my favorite things is I think it's the New York City Transit or MTA has a site like this.
Oh, yeah, the lost and found.
But just for like trash cans, weird subway signs.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, all right. I thought Instagram ads were a problem. Now I found GSA.gov. auctions.gov. I'm in deep trouble. Let's get back to the antitrust.
Sorry. I didn't mean to derail. Yes.
Let's get back to the antitrust hearings. I swore that before this show, I would sit down and watch all 6 hours of testimony, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But I'm sure you all did with a fine tooth comb. So what are the takeaways?
Go ahead.
You start.
No, I was just going to say my takeaway is that they gathered an extraordinary bit of evidence. Leo, if you ran Twit and had as little information as these CEOs seem to have about Amazon,
I don't know anything about
Google,
that.
I mean,
if we did that, that would be wrong. Right. But I can't promise we didn't do that.
What's happening here?
Yeah.
No, they it really seemed to be them repeatedly This was the pattern. The government would be talking out some emails. They'd have them dead to rights on some anti-competitive behavior, something that was just completely indefensible. And they'd be like, oh, gosh, I just don't know anything about that. I think what we were trying to say is we're trying to empower users. And they just kept trying to flip it around. Like, the other part of it that was so stunning is all four of them really kept talking about their companies like they're these nimble, humble upstarts that just may have made a few mistakes. And it's like, y'all just beat the market repeatedly because you're all effectively monopolies or duopolies. Like, you know, you're not this nimble, like, garage run company anymore. You are real entities. And I just, I really thought Congress did a pretty good job, all the grandstanding, put aside.
And it's the staff as much as anything else. I mean, they clearly did a lot of document. Are they able to use the power of discovery? Can they subpoena documents? Is that because they got a lot of internal emails?
They released a lot of documents at the beginning of the hearing so that they could discuss it, a lot of emails and other things that were, I don't know, totally new.
For instance, emails that said internal Facebook emails that said, oh, we're really worried about Instagram. It's a real threat. Right before they bought it, confirming what everyone knows, which is that they bought it as a defensive action. Jamie Raskin got Bezos to admit Amazon are priced below market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always assumed that Amazon probably figured we'll make it up in the transactions it'll go through us as a result. Same thing with the Fire tablets. But I guess it's the problem is, from an antitrust point of view, how do you compete with something that's priced below the cost to make it?
They also proved in the hearing that Amazon actually ranks its products up in Alexa above other products that are offered.
Again, so, something everybody who's used it knew, but it's good to get confirmation. It wasn't just your instinct. They accused Amazon. Actually, this was the PopSocket guy. And they brought this up, who accused Amazon of making duplicate products to his until he ponied up $2 million in ad buys. And then mysteriously, the Amazon version of the PopSockets disappeared. Jeff Bezos said, well, I don't know anything about that. If we did that, it was wrong.
Whoops.
I will say one thing that I found astounding, very interesting about this hearing, is that it showed strangely that Mark Zuckerberg has been through a lot of these. He understood kind of how to play it.
Yeah.
He understood how to phrase his answers and respond in situations where he wasn't quite sure versus, say, Bezos, who has never been in this position before, floundered a lot.
Yeah.
I also, you know, maybe this is just me, but I'm looking at the kind of message that's sent by the way by the backdrops these executives had, the way they were shot. Bezos, for instance, and my Skype room picked this up on Twitter. He said, get a ring light, Jeff. You've got them on sale right now at Amazon.com. Jeff was, and I think this was quite intentional. He was so poorly lit that he kind of blended into the background. And I think the intent was really to make him almost disappear. You know, he's managed to avoid these testimony up to now. It's just kind of the, you know, in a nutshell, Jeff Bezos's way of handling all this is he doesn't give interviews. He doesn't testify. He just sits in the back, but he's definitely the puppet master. There's no question about that. He's pulling the strings. There will be. So the upshot of this, this is a big showpiece. And members of Congress used it to grandstand. But there was a point, and the point is there will be a report from the subcommittee, a final report, which will probably not come out before the election. Six hearings, 385 hours of calls and meetings, and most importantly, 1.3 million documents from these companies. Lots of legwork done before this testimony. And I think the point of this report is, well, here's what we think should happen. Things like, I don't know what's on the table, maybe that Facebook should be required to divest Instagram and WhatsApp. That I'm almost certain will be one of the things they'll talk about. They did talked to Sundar Pichai, CEO of Alphabet, and by extension Google, over a Google email saying some websites were getting too much traffic. Yeah. So did you get that email, Matt?
I don't recall getting that email. It's interesting because, like, I was there when the search team was like eight people around a ping pong table, and I always saw people acting with a lot of integrity and trying to make sure that the results were fair, they were nonpartisan. If somebody types in X, they get information or an answer about X. But I haven't seen that email. I'm wondering whether, it's also the case that if like eight out of the top 10 results are one site, then somebody could send an email that's like, oh, this site is dominating the search results in a way that's unfair. And then the shorthand might be this site is getting too much traffic. But I've personally seen where investigators can ask questions about things that to a search engineer, you're like, oh, these results are interesting. And then they're like, are they interesting because you are squashing a competitor? And they're like, no, they're interesting because it's actually got more French results than we would have expected, right, given that there aren't that many French queries, that sort of thing.
That's what makes it so difficult. Just the phrase getting too much traffic it's not a smoking gun. Now the imputation is this site was getting more traffic than our own sites, but it could absolutely just be a failure of, oh, the algorithm's putting this result up more than it ought to. Pichai's response was, Congressman, just like other businesses, we try to understand trends from data, which we can see, and we can use it to improve our products for users. That was, by the way, the drumbeat from all of them, but especially for Sundar Pichai, is we want to improve our products for users. I have to say, at the beginning, when all four gave their statements, I wanted to stand up and wave the flag. I wanted to say, yeah, God bless them. This is the engine of the American economy. This is what's moving us forward. This is where innovation is happening, that these companies are doing their best to make the best possible product. As Tim Cook said, I guess it's true, we aren't dominant in any field that we participate in. We are not even close to dominant. We just try to make the best products for users. And I think to some degree, to take the opposite side from you, Brianna, that's what these companies do. And I don't think they should be punished for doing it well.
Well, I would actually agree. I thought Tim Cook, I think if you wanted to rank who got master blasted in this hearing, I think Amazon would be number one. Facebook would be number two. I thought Google and Apple got off relatively unscathed.
I hardly talked to Tim, actually.
Yeah, I listened to most of the hearing while I was working. And, the biggest moment with Tim Cook was him being asked about cancel culture for some asinine reason. So I found Apple's answers generally compelling on this, as well as Google's. So I think I agree with you, Leo.
There'd be a risk for Congress to be too aggressive in this, because especially now, during COVID, we are really reliant on technology companies.
Yeah.
Is it the case, do you think, maybe I'll ask Paris this, is it the case that these companies are so big that we don't see the innovative ferment we used to see? I heard one of my colleagues say in the early days, there'd be hundreds of different products from hundreds of different companies. There was nobody one huge dominant player. We had so much to cover. Now it's really, we cover Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple, do you feel like that's true, Paris? Is that fair?
I mean, I feel like from a coverage perspective, yes, just because it is.
They're so dominant.
There are so many. They're so large. Each of them are a world in and of themselves, essentially. And there is a lot to cover within each company, much less all of them combined. I mean, do I think that translates directly to whether or not these companies are monopolies? It's not my position to say. But I think it's interesting and perhaps not the right framework to apply here when you're thinking about like a coverage perspective. I think that a coverage perspective is always going to be focused on the biggest players in the room, because there just isn't enough energy out there, much less funding in media or even just from users, to have your eyes on everything. But I think that also when you have companies that do get so large and do affect so many people, that warrants criticism and warrants a careful eye.
That's exactly what David Cicilline, who's the chair said, he said, because these companies are so central in our modern life, this was in his opening, their business practices and decisions have an outsized effect on our economy and democracy. Any single action by any one of these companies can affect hundreds of millions of us in profound and lasting ways. Absolutely. Nobody denies that. That's why we cover them. We cover because they change our lives. That's not inherently bad.
Yeah.
What do you think, Matt? I mean, you have the best perspective on Google having worked there. And I would agree with you. Everybody I ever met from Google had, just like Tim Cook, had the interest in making the best product they could.
Yeah, I think that's true. I also think way back, you know, the first like FTC investigation, like 2011 or whatever, you know, the thing that Google would say is, we understand that with size comes scrutiny. And I think given the size of all these companies, it is perfectly appropriate to scrutinize them. And at the same time, it was interesting to see how, if you think about like an earlier Zuckerberg hearing, the questions were not on point, as seen by Paris's hat, for example. And the questions, like you could tell a bunch of research happened. And for me, one of the most interesting things is how do you get like the idea of lawmakers passing laws to regulate technology when they might not perfectly understand some of the issues involved is a little bit scary. And so there's some interesting areas. There's this thing called Tech Congress, for example. They've got fellowship applications opening for the next 3 weeks. So they bring in technologists, computer scientists, engineers, and they sit in the offices of like important members of Congress to help make sure that people understand technology and you can ask the right questions or you can get to the issues that matter. And I think getting more technologists talking to DC and vice versa is probably good for both worlds.
One, I mean, Cicilline was kind of a bulldog and he bared down on this Google issue. And this is the one I really want to ask you about, Matt. The claim is that Google favors its own content over other sites' content. Cicilline put it in, I think, a very nasty way. He said, why does Google steal content from honest businesses? And he was pointing at Yelp, which maybe not the most honest business I've ever heard of.
I think honest business is an oxymoron generally, but
yeah, they're all trying to. And Yelp, you know, I mean, let's face it, a lot of this scrutiny comes from Google competitors who are unhappy with Google's success and whether in the EU or here, and Yelp's a good example, go, hey, guys, you really ought to look into this. This is something terrible. But it is the case that when you do a Google search, and Pichai said this is particularly in commerce when you're looking to buy a product, that Google's going to surface shopping information. There's a lot of knowledge cards now. Used to be Google search results was just search results. Now there's the knowledge card and there's a lot more stuff. And a lot of it does have YouTube videos, YouTube, you know, Google shopping. Google's excuse is we're trying to give people the information they're looking for. We're trying to answer their question. Right, Matt?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think the people in the search team still believe that. They've internalized that. And I also think there's you know, tension, which is well deserved, because as Google moves up the value chain of delivering better and better answers, you know, there are some sites, you know, from my old world with SEO hat on where, you know, people would feel like you're taking a snippet from my site. And that's the thing that people really want to know, like how high is this celebrity is.
So they never go to the site because they got the information. That's a legit complaint.
It's a legit complaint and it's a valid concern on both sides. Like, well, okay, if you really all you needed to know was, you know, how high Tom Cruise was,
right,
then, you know, maybe they're not going to stay on your
site. Do you mean
how
high or how tall?
How tall, sorry. he can be as high as he wants. He doesn't need to be tall. But then the flip side is, you know, the other day I was invoking my Google device and I was like, you know, tell me how to spell loquacious. And it just spells it right out. It doesn't point me to another website. But that's what you want as the user.
Yeah. That's what you want.
Yeah.
So I do have to say, as someone that watched most of this hearing, we're not just talking about things that show up in Google site results. Like some of the most explosive moments we're talking about for Google's own lyrics that show up on Android. And they had one particular company that put that out there. They actually put fake records in their lyrics. And you know, Google was caught red.
Yeah,
exactly. Google was caught using that. So this isn't,
More complicated because Google said, sure. we didn't scrape it from Rap Genius. We hired a company that scraped it from Rap Genius.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's not our fault. It's that company's fault. And I think, at least in Google's defense, they stopped doing that. But they did get caught red-handed.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just saying, I think it's a wider pattern of behavior that I think could be construed as anti-competitive. And in my opinion, if you're using a third-party person and they're doing something that blatant, I think your company should face sanctions in that case. So that's my opinion.
The problem is it's just so hard to figure out. I mean, I think it's a good defense. Well, we're just trying to give people the answer that they expect.
Another thing that came up at the hearing, which was based on article written by a couple of my colleagues, the information is kind of the accusations that Google has used its Android platform and the amount of information it can kind of collect on how users using Android use apps in order to do research for its own applications. I think the situation that that my colleagues discussed in their article was in preparation for launching Google's own possible like TikTok competitor, they pulled data from Android about how people use TikTok on Android devices, which seems kind of like a conflict of interest there.
It's a jerky move, if true. So,
yeah, but and Amazon's accused of using retail data to figure out what products it should make. Mm-hmm. But I think every business in the world would do that. Does that, right? We're trying to figure. I guess Amazon has a unique access to data that it wouldn't normally have. Is that why it's wrong?
The issue is that if you listen to the complaints of small, like first-party sellers or third-party sellers on Amazon, they say, "Oh, I have been making this unicorn-themed hairbrush for 10 years. Everybody loves my unicorn hairbrush. It's been doing so well. Then all of a sudden, I see Amazon brand unicorn hairbrush appears top of the search results, is the Amazon choice, and nobody buys my unicorn hairbrush anymore."
That's a good complaint.
In situations like that, it seems, to be a fairly concerning practice if true.
This is the same problem I have with Google owning YouTube and Amazon selling stuff, is it mixes the two things together. If Google were just a search engine, it wouldn't be so much of a problem, except that it controls one of the number one deliverer of video content. So that kind of muddles the matter. Amazon, if it's going to do what it's due, shouldn't also be in the business of making these products because they have an unusual amount of information. I mean, face it, I bought this hygiene hand on Kickstarter, which shows that I'm an idiot. Because I paid too much for it.
Oh, I've gotten so many Instagram ads for that thing.
Same.
But the point is, the minute that this went on Kickstarter, 800 Chinese companies made an exact clone of it and sold it for a tenth the price.
Yeah.
So all my friends have cheap ones. I have the fancy one. It's just a piece of metal that you poke stuff with. It shouldn't be expensive. But the point is, they didn't need Amazon data to do that. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Don't judge me, but I bought LED light up eyelashes.
Okay, please back up. What's the context for this purchase?
Yeah,
I don't know.
What was the URL for that?
It was F. Yeah, see, yeah, Matt understands. It was called the F Lash Interactive LED Eyelash.
Do you have a video recording of you wearing them?
Yeah, no. Well, I ordered them, and this was another Kickstarter. I have a problem with Kickstarter. As soon as it went on Kickstarter, this poor guy, Vietnamese guy, got undercut by 100 Chinese companies selling. I mean, they said, "Well, we can do that. There's nothing special about that."
Oh my God!
And so, as a result, I didn't get my F lashes for months. But everybody else at the party had them. So I feel...
Your lashes feel dark and unilluminated.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't even wear them. I thought, screw this. You know, it's not special anymore.
I tell you, you got everything you need for your own TikTok channel. I'm telling
you. You're ready.
You got the lashes.
Yeah. You should be just posting content of you unboxing all of your crazy Kickstarter things.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
3 months after it's been on the market for half the price.
In front of your Black Hawk helicopter.
Yeah. Oh, man. If I bought that, I probably would be a TikTok star for a moment or two. That'd be good. Just do that quick.
I get your point. I really do.
It's complicated.
It is complicated, and in this particular case, my husband does patent law, and I would, with this particular business plan, I would say, what you have in front of you is not novel in a way that it can be patented according to our laws, and you should understand that this is a business threat. That's reasonable. I do think that's a slightly different situation than a company abusing their data to undercut competitors and threaten other companies, which is what came out in this hearing. So I think I really agree with you, Matt. The way forward is these are big companies. They deserve scrutiny. And I think you can never say often enough, you know who wasn't at this hearing today? It's Microsoft. We brought that case against them in the 90s, and they have been a pretty ethical company, generally speaking, in the three decades now.
So you would submit that the DOJ prosecution of Microsoft in the 90s was successful in that regard?
What I've heard from my friends that work at Microsoft over and over and over again is that fundamentally changed the culture.
Interesting.
And that there was more of an anything goes approach before then. And then they finally had a conversation where it had to go through legal. They had to have discussions if it was going to open them up to liability. So my opinion is this is all checks and balances, right? If the, not talking about Trump, but a generic president were to do something that was over the line, Congress checks them, that doesn't necessarily mean the presidency itself is corrupt. It's just a system meant to check each other.
Good point.
I think until we see stronger antitrust actions against against tech companies, I think they're going to feel free to just keep pushing the line harder and harder. So I strongly support this line of investigation.
Cicilline ended the hearing saying, "This hearing has made one fact clear to me. These companies, as they exist today, have monopoly power." Remember, this is the antitrust committee. That's their bailiwick. Some need to be broken up. I'm not sure which of the four need to be broken up, but anyway, some need to be broken up. All need to be properly regulated and held accountable. We need to ensure the antitrust laws first written more than a century ago work in the digital age. So what is the remedy for, let's pick one thing. What would you do about Facebook? Would you make them divest Instagram? Is that the remedy there? That's the easiest one, I guess.
I think so. I'd love to know what other people think, but that seems like a slam dunk to me. At the very least, I think we need huge civil fines when, you know, Google gets caught manipulating advertisers to put
they
people out of business.
They make so much money. Right. I mean, we've seen that in the EU. These companies are so wealthy, the fine would have to be astronomical to hurt them.
We got bills, Leo. I'm 100% for it.
Yeah. What about you, Paris? What remedies would you like to see out of these hearings?
I don't know. I mean, I think about this often, is that there are no good solutions in this case. I mean, even if you're looking at the history of antitrust law, I'm trying to forget whether it was Standard Oil or Sugar or something else like that. But when companies had been ordered to be broken up before, oftentimes the thing that ends up happening is, oh yes, you have the seven parts of this company, but the same people sit on the boards of all of those companies and have meetings at the same day at different times where they all move from one room to another. You know, it seems like, oh, break them up is an easy and soundbiteable answer. But in actuality, there's going to be a lot more steps. And be it fines, then the question I was like, what sort of fine would actually work on this? Breaking it up, how do you ensure that actually, you know, does what you meant it to do and that the companies operate entirely separately? It's going to be a complicated and convoluted process no matter how it is done. And I think that that's one aspect of this that people are not focusing on enough, and not enough kind of academic or just expert thought is being given to it generally, because this is, I feel like, the part we have been on currently of, oh, should these companies be broken up? That is not like 10% of the overall problem. And the what do we do next part is going to be the 90% of the iceberg.
I agree. One of the, for instance, one of the things that came out of the hearing, the subcommittee had internal emails from Amazon. Now, we all knew that this happened, but they have the smoking gun. Remember diapers.com? What was that one started by the founder of Jet? I think it was.
I think so.
Yeah. Amazon wanted to force the company to basically go out of the market and sell to Amazon. One email said, these guys are our number, this is a quote, these guys are our number one short-term competitor. We need to match pricing on these guys no matter what the cost. Amazon said it was willing to lose, in these emails, was willing to lose $200 million to get diapers.com by selling products at a loss, put them out of business. This is exactly what Amazon did. The reason Jet.com was founded is because this guy was angry that this happened. And he said, I'm going to beat Amazon at its own game. Didn't happen. It sounds like they've got the smoking gun over this. So, what, Matt, what do you do? What does Congress do? Define them?
I mean, you know.
It's too late.
And how much can you unscramble the egg when you're like, okay, how long has Instagram been purchased or DoubleClick right. been purchased by Google or something like that? Like, it's really tricky because on one hand, you know, the tension for me is if you don't like Facebook, you can stop using Facebook. You can stop buying Apple products. There are other search engines you can go to besides Google, and you can buy things at places other than Amazon. So there are some ways that the market can self-correct, you know, and the latest social network is TikTok, and Facebook doesn't have it. So you can see how some of these companies that are even moving very fast are not always able to keep up with the internet. And so I can see the argument towards slowing them down somewhat or checks and balances. And the problem that I have with that is having been in government for 4 years now in the US government, like there's a lot of bad regulations. There's a lot of unintended consequences. There's a lot of times where people said, okay, this is how we're going to solve the problem and end up making it much, much mm-hmm. worse, mm-hmm. especially regarding technology. And mm-hmm. so it's a hard problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that one, I don't know, example that really changed the way I think about this is Kashmir Hill did a really great series for Gizmodo when she worked there, and she just kind of did a re-up of it at the Times when she tried to cut the big four tech companies yes. out of her life. First, yep. you know, one at a time, cutting Google, then Amazon, like all these different companies, and then all at once. And it totally wrecked her life because, I mean, while we think of let's say Amazon at this company where you go to buy stuff, they also like undergird the entire internet. Amazon Web Services is where Amazon makes most of its money. It is so many different other companies. Same with all of these. I mean, it's impossible to kind of, like you said, unscramble the egg and take these things back from where they are now.
Yeah, she actually wrote updated her piece a couple of days ago after the testimony reminding us how much they're part of. Yeah, they're so integrated into everything we do. Diapers.com is not coming back. I guess you could do what the DOJ did with Microsoft, which is put an ombudsman in the company to keep an eye on them and say, you know, keep an eye on things like this and stop it as it happens. And there, you know, there is a part of the antitrust law says that it's illegal to buy a competitor to put it out of business. You can't do that. And so that would be perhaps an argument about that's the Clayton Act of 1914. It's 106 years old. But it's still the law of the land. If the effect of an acquisition may be substantially to lessen competition or to tend to create a monopoly, it's prohibited. So they could say, you know, you got to give Instagram back. I don't know how you would do that. I think Kevin's system's long gone. Here, Kevin, can you give us our $1 billion back? I don't think that's going to happen. So
I really do understand. I'm right there with you. I understand the pessimism about this. I hear you on government regulation. I've spent the last 2 weeks trying to understand federal and state PAC law.
Yeah.
I really, really understand the point. But I just think it's worth taking a beat here and thinking about what the price is of inaction. I am of the opinion that the tech industry has to be able to innovate. And we have some very serious sectors of our economy where it's very difficult, if not impossible, to come in there and truly innovate. Like VCs generally don't fund things within the same space where Amazon is operating. You know, Apple and Google are effectively a duopoly on smartphones. So I hear you that this is very difficult. I think we have to try. In any plan of action here, it's a step in the right direction, because if we do nothing, it's just going to keep being this uncontained growth of power. And I think it's also worth thinking about Facebook. I attribute in large part to the results of our last election. I think there are real concerns to be had about foreign interference in this election and beyond. So if we don't start having these conversations, I'm really not sure what our country is going to look like.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It's a wake-up call.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, if I were a CEO of a large tech company, I would be asking myself very hard questions about what kind of promises I can make about the behavior that I will do or that I won't do. Like, Leo, you mentioned an ombudsman. You know, newspapers have these sort of public editor and ombudsman roles. And empowering someone who could, you know, investigate any one of these instances, report back without fear or favor, and, you know, make a binding recommendation would be a really strong thing. You know, back in the day, Google had the data liberation front, which was this idea that you could at any time export all of your data. They called it takeout, you know, out of Google. And that doesn't mean you're going to not use Google Docs, but the fact that you can export all of your stuff was a really nice reassurance for a lot of folks. And so, you know, I think every tech company ought to be asking themselves, look, what were the bad looks in this hearing? How can we get ahead of it? What preemptive promises can we make? Because promises can be hard. They bind you to behavior and they have really bad, you know, hangover effects if you break a promise. But at the same time, having somebody else come in and take even stronger action, or action that hopefully is informed but might not be as tech savvy, like I'd be thinking hard about how do you get ahead of it rather than just reacting.
Yeah. I do want to say, just in response to that, though, you know, we had Olivia Salon from NBC on our show just last week. And you know, there's this pattern over and over with Facebook where they say, oh, we're going to take on racial bias. You know, Facebook got caught basically allowing redlining, not renting apartments to people of color, right? And they've sworn up and down, we're going to change it. We got caught twice. And she did this breakthrough story talking about how Facebook basically uncovered that their algorithm was encouraging racism in some very serious ways. And what did Facebook do? They decided to shut that research down, according to her story, and the researchers were not allowed to tell people about that. I love the idea of an ombudsman in that situation, and maybe Google would have the public trust for something like that. I do think with a Facebook, I would not have any faith, given stories that have come out, that they would stick to that.
Yeah. They just keep doing it over and over.
I mean, currently they have the oversight board that they instituted, which
their own
mysteriously is going to be delayed till after the election, until cases can be heard in front of it.
Mm-hmm. What a surprise. You know, rereading the DOJ settlement with Microsoft is really interesting. This is almost 20 years ago.
And November 2001.
Isn't that amazing? And honestly, if you look at what's in here, and I'll go down to the bottom where they talk about the on-site enforcement monitors, but there are lots of clauses in here that are totally sensible and doable. And I think I would agree with you, Brianna, that it did make a difference. And Microsoft did become a kinder, gentler company. And you know what? They succeeded even more because of it. So it didn't hurt Microsoft, but the on-site enforcement monitors three independent on-site full-time computer experts to insist in enforcing the proposed final judgment. They have full access to all of Microsoft's books, records, systems, and personnel, including source code, and will help resolve disputes about Microsoft's compliance with the disclosure provisions in the final judgment. As I remember, it's only been in the last year or two that that ended. That went on for a very long time. Every bit of this settlement is sensible, reasonable, and it didn't hurt Microsoft. It did improve competition. It took them an awful long time to get it, and maybe it was too late by the time it happened. The lawsuit went on for almost a decade. But I think that it did make a difference. And so there is a model for the way this could go forward. And I wouldn't be too draconian. I agree with you, Matt. You get all sorts of unintended consequences. But I think some oversight is absolutely necessary.
And imagine what the tech industry would look like if we hadn't had that lawsuit today. Microsoft had stagnated. I mean, really think about that. Think about where they were in that era. If they had had no, you know, business impetus to go do things like their liquid data strategy is freaking awesome. Right. The stuff Microsoft is doing right now, in my opinion, is 10 times more interesting than what Apple is doing. And I love Apple. So I feel like this is, it's one of those things like where the doctor tells you to take your medicine, and even though it's not pleasant, you end up healthier.
Yeah.
And I do think that this would help the tech industry.
Let's take a little break. Great discussion. Next, we're going to talk about the Twitter hack. There have been arrests.
Yes.
But first, a word from our sponsor, Stamps.com. You do not want to go to the post office. I don't want to go to the post office. I love the post office. But why do I need to go to the post office when I can do everything I could do from the post office from the comfort of my desk at home or at work? Stamps.com. Keep your business running. Avoid the crowds at the post office. You could print on-demand postage from your computer with your printer. No special ink needed. In fact, you could even get discounts you can't get at the post office. On first-class mail, 5 cents off every stamp. Stamps.com now offers, get ready for this, UPS services as well. So really now they're the ultimate in mailing. If you're an Amazon seller, an eBay seller, an Etsy seller, if you mail anything, you really need Stamps.com. Print postage on demand. You get a USB scale, so you always have the right, exact right postage. We've been using them since 2012. And I would, and if you haven't tried them yet, what are you waiting for? I would never go back. Stamps.com brings all the mailing and shipping services you need right to your computer, right at your home or your office. Use any computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7, any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. It'll print right on the envelope with your company logo, autofills the address from your computer, from your address book, or from your online selling profile. Automatically fills in the return address. Once your mail's ready, you leave it for your mail carrier. You can even schedule a pickup, drop it in a mailbox. 5 cents off every stamp, up to 62% off USPS and UPS shipping rates. One of the things they do there is, did you know that there's a big residential surcharge when you mail using UPS? I don't know how they did it, but Stamps.com got UPS to waive that. No residential surcharge when you use Stamps.com to send your UPS packages. Stamps.com is a no-brainer. It'll save you time. It'll save you money. And we've got a really good deal for you. See that $5? Forget that. Forget. I know you're a nice lady. But click the link up in the corner there, that microphone, and enter the code TWIT. And that little $5 in free postage turns into $55 in free postage. Plus, to get the USB scale, a month of Stamps.com. No long-term commitment. I think this is a really great thing. I don't. You should do it right now. Just do it right now. I love it. Whenever I need postage, I say, honey, can you print me some postage? And if I miss the post office, I can get her to put on a little, you know, a little thing with the sleeve garters and a little visor. And, you know, she can rubber stamp things. It still feels the same. I still get the postage, but I get it for less. I love Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, stamps.com, and the offer code TWIT.
You got to get a new one of those images, but with your mask fitter on it.
Oh, yeah. We changed. I don't know if you saw. We changed a lot of our album art to have the masks on it. I was so proud of that. Our team was saying, you know, what can we do to help people do the right thing and wear masks? So we changed a lot of, not all of our album art has people on it anymore, but there's security now with Steve Gibson and his mask, the tech guy with me and my Twit mask, Mary Jo and Paul in there. I like that. Isn't that fun?
Oh, I think this is so just cute. Those three.
Yeah, the little cute little maskies.
Oh, the penguin is wearing
a mask. Oh, even Tux is wearing a mask for Floss Weekly. Well, penguins are especially, vulnerable, I think. Our Ham Nation host, Bob Heil, in his mask. You wouldn't want a penguin to get COVID-19. That'd be terrible.
It's true. It'd be real bad.
Oh, I love this story. Now, I'm going to say it up front. Allegedly. Then I'm not going to say it anymore because I think they got these guys dead to rights.
Allegedly.
So, and this was fast work on the part of the FBI.
Turns out when it's teens who've hacked into Twitter, you can get them arrested.
Get them.
Lickety split.
Go get them. Well, the teens were kind of not really, their OPSEC wasn't really good, shall I say.
Telling me a 17-year-old doesn't have great OPSEC? What is this?
Also, Twitter's OPSEC wasn't that good.
Well, Twitter was just as bad. Twitter was terrible. So I think, you know, again, allegedly. and this is from the court documents. Vice actually got a look at the court documents. A 17-year-old kid. So remember we said it was Kirk? They think this is Kirk. I'm not going to say, okay, because it is alleged, trial hasn't happened, I'm not going to say anybody's names. I'll just use their handles. But Kirk just graduated high school. And what Kirk did, there were charges against two other suspects, 19-year-old Chaewon and Rolex. He's 22. These were guys that did the OG users. They were looking for the OG user accounts. Mm-hmm. Kirk figured out apparently how to get into the Twitter God mode, but it was a two-step hack. Now this is something we didn't know before. I'd mentioned that apparently he was able to get credentials to Twitter's Slack account, and they had pinned the login to the God mode in the top of the Slack account. So he got that. But I didn't know this part. It was two-factor. See? They do have good OPSEC. So Kirk, not his real name, calls up 17, remember? Says, hi, this is Twitter security. And we think there's been a breach. I just want to verify. Did you just get a code? A 6-digit code? Did you just get one? Yeah. What was that code? Was it 649322? No. Oh no. What was it?
I don't. It was 474933.
Oh boy, we got a problem. I'll get back to you. Thank you for your help, citizen. What they call a phone spear phishing attack. Then he gets in, and gets in like 2 weeks before the Bitcoin stuff. And then he goes on the discourse for OG users and says, I wish I could find the, I was reading it this morning. I think it was Brian Krebs had it. The dialogue on discourse. I can get, what do you want? I can get you anything you want. $1,000. Here we go.
Speaking of
don't show his picture.
Oh, you're
though.
Looking for it.
Yeah.
The quest for OG handles. If anybody hasn't listened to Reply All, has a phenomenal podcast episode where their host, like Alex Goldman, like gets into the Discord room of a lot of these people who are hacking accounts to try and get OG handles. And OG handles again is shorthand
like
for
at I don't know, y,
a single letter
at
account.
Six.
Like, yeah, at six or something. That's Adrian
Lamo's
like that. Or there are other like single word accounts where it's like at lizard or at Harry. You know?
He wanted at vampire. That was a big one. He wanted that one. So here's a picture of the negotiation. By the way, apparently, I didn't know this, but Discord, you know, keeps logs. So they got the whole thing.
Great OPSEC.
Yeah. Well, it gets worse. There it is. There's his Bitcoin address right there. He says, I'll take 10K. Here's my Bitcoin address. Let me know. And so they were negotiating over how much with Chaewon / Ever So Anxious, also known as Mason. And so, there was a lot of dialogue.
He said, would you be able to get this done? He's at the doctor's right now, but can pay you when he gets back from the doctor's.
Yeah, in an hour or so. Great. Yeah, they're kids. They're kids. One's 19, one's 22, and then Kirk is just 17, just graduated.
So now that I'm not running for office, I feel like I could say this. Leo, you know, remember when War Games came out?
Yeah.
You know, that's all I did as a teenager. I'm going to be serious. That's all I did.
You're a hacker. You're a hacker.
Hacking the BBSs. Yep. I mean, I would, if I were 17 today, I would totally
been doing
be,
that.
Yes. Yeah. So, these poor
so
kids.
Kirk
would you be Kirk or Rolodex?
Rolex, baby.
I think I'm more of a Kirk because of the bad decision.
Yeah. Kirk says, I work for Twitter. I can claim, here's the dialogue. This is from ZDNet. I can claim any at for you. Let me know. Don't tell anyone. Then Rolex says, LOL, prove it. Then Kirk says, okay, give me your twiddle hander. I'll pull it up. So Rolex says, I'm ViennaCat921. Kirk says, okay, what's it say now? Oh, dude, you can do it. So, dude. He says, 5K for all three? Yeah. Is Vamp at Vampire doable? Guy wants him. Yeah, sure. I can get you at Vampire. Whatever you want. I can get it for you. 1K minimum. Let's say that for non-OJ. Rolex actually says you should charge 2.5 for OG. Nah, just make it 1K, says Kirk, for all of them. 1K is fine. All right. All righty then.
A man of the people.
A man of the people. So he made a few mistakes. just a couple. So the FBI, the way the FBI got this, once they got the user details from Discord, they had a copy of the OG users forum database that had leaked online in April. And apparently these guys were still using the same handles. The database had not only their usernames, but emails and IP addresses. Okay. Okay. And then one of the guys got caught because he linked the Discord username from his OG users page. So now, okay, now we got Kirk matched up, Rolex matched up. And then... He used the same two email addresses to register a Coinbase account. One of the things, and by the way, that was how he's going to get the money with the Bitcoin address. But one of the things Coinbase does, and I know this because I signed up for an account a while ago, they want a picture of your driver's license. So he sent them a photo of his driver's license with his home address on it. He used his home connection to access those accounts on all three sites. Discord, Coinbase, and OG users. They used the driver's license. They used their own credit cards. So
okay,
they were
but
just
here's
kids.
The thing. Here's the thing, Leo. Like, this is all bringing back flashbacks from my web spam days when you'd have a black hat and you'd pull on a thread. And the fact is, spammers are lazy. And if you are good, you can come up with 15 different ways to track somebody. Yeah. And unless they get all 15 right, you know, that's all right. You can find they missed number 12. Okay, now you can find their whole network or whatever. Shut it down. Not let them know how you did it. Leave a few so that you keep them guessing. Like, most spammers are lazy and they do things like reuse information, reuse logins. Like,
well, also,
this is bad though.
This is a valuable reminder that Bitcoin is not anonymous if you ever want to get anything out of it. you know, that at some point, if you want the money, you're going to have to go somewhere to get it, right? And apparently, Coinbase would not be your first choice. Coinbase, by the way, say, they blocked $280,000 from being sent to the scammers. Court documents say that they did get 12.83 Bitcoin, which is $117,000. So this was actually a very lucrative scam, remember they tweeted as Barack Obama and Joe Biden and Bill Gates and Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos.
I don't
saying,
know, though. I feel like that's not – I would expect you'd get more for tweeting as all of these people asking people to send Bitcoin. 117,000?
I know. Could have been could have been somebody.
Yeah,
instead of in
they could
jail.
Have been millionaires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Twitter's...
Now they're just a Florida jail.
Remember the first thing Twitter said was, well, they only downloaded DMs from 8 accounts. That number has gone up.
36, right?
Yeah, 36 DMs. Password reset for 45. He interacted with 130 accounts. This is from the logs from the Twitter admin tool. I figured those are probably accurate.
But what I want to know then is if it was this collection of teens ostensibly getting OG usernames, why did they access the DMs of some elected official in the Netherlands?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? What does Kirk know that we don't? See, this is the this will be the everlasting question is, so well, now we know Kirk is not really Vladimir. He's actually some kid just got out of high school in Tampa. But I feel sorry for him because his life. Well, yeah, maybe not. He might get a good job when he gets out of jail.
But here's the thing. Okay. If a 17-year-old in Tampa can do this in what sounds like kind of a drunken weekend, you know, what does that say for nation states and other, you know, large actors that are maybe a little more subtle?
Yeah, that may well already have had this access for a long time. But yeah, no, if you're smart, you don't announce it. You just, you know, you sit there and watch.
Yeah, if you're smart, you don't tweet out the Bitcoin scam everybody's accounts.
I love just the idea of Kirk, the 17-year-old just got out of high school, pretending to be Twitter security. Hi.
I wonder if he like wrote a script or something for him to say, or was he just freestyling?
You know, he might be really good at this. I don't know. It's pretty funny.
Don't piss off Kirk.
Yeah.
Imagine if a nation state were really, really going after us. I mean, there have to be 0 days for Facebook and, you know, Twitter that they don't know about. If Twitter's freaking posting God mode in their Slack, I mean, of course. And
that's so stupid. That's so stupid.
Do you ever wonder about why they didn't get Donald Trump's account? Because my theory on this is after that Twitter employee, deleted his account, a year ago, roughly?
He wasn't even an employee. He was a contractor.
Right. I bet that they put some kind of hard-coded break in his account or something.
I bet in the president's, but apparently not in Joe Biden, Elon Musk, or Jeff Bezos's. And after all, the number one most followed Twitter user is Barack Obama. Didn't put any protections there, apparently.
Yeah.
And now there's more information. Twitter contractors reportedly used internal tools to spy on celebrities, including Beyonce. I can't imagine a worse waste of energy than reading Beyonce's DMs, but some Twitter contractors made a kind of game out of creating bogus help desk inquiries that let them spy on the account of celebrities. Twitter, you would think after the breach, the Donald's account, after Jack Dorsey got hacked last year, you would think they would have some sort of better policies.
Yeah.
Twitter probably thinks, as I still do, that it's just a message. It's just a thing. It's not. But the president of the United States uses it to announce things like, I'm going to ban TikTok. So maybe it is more important.
Delay the election.
Yeah, delay the election. Maybe there is some importance there. Maybe he didn't even tweet that. Maybe somebody else did. Maybe Kirk. Maybe Kirk thought it was a good idea.
Kirk just
We're 4 seconds away from him blaming it on Kirk, I feel.
It was Kirk. He did say it was some 400-pound kid in his mother's basement. Didn't he say that?
He said
Barron knows the cyber. Yeah.
He also said, I take no responsibility. So, yeah. You know, maybe Kirk is the one taking responsibility.
I wonder... In 20 years, I want to live another 20 years. I know it's a long shot, but I just can't wait to read the inside story of the last four. It's just going to be like mind-blowing, I think, I feel like.
But Leo, if you'd read the headlines that are in 2020, in 2019, you wouldn't have believed
it. I wouldn't have believed it.
Like COVID, everybody's wearing masks.
I know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have believed it.
January 1st, 2020, the big fashion trend is going to be masks. Go big on masks.
How did we get in this timeline? I want to know.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like if we went back to that twit night that we had, Leo, with you, me, and Brianna in February of this year, and zoomed in and said, like, all right, guys, here's what you're in for the next 5 months. Absolutely no way would we have believed ourselves.
It's pretty amazing.
I think we all pair up for an X-Men Days of Future Past episode. We go back to that episode. We warn scientists. We're going to get it under control.
We're like, it's airborne. Get masks. Everybody go up. You know, everybody stay inside. We're going to be good.
I got to listen to that show now. I wonder what you guys were saying. You know, there are all these artifacts from the before days where we just didn't know. I can't wait to
which was like February,
a couple of months ago. Yeah, I know.
Have you had that happen yet, that like pictures show up on your, you know, your Facebook, or you're looking at something on your phone from like 4 months ago and you're like, oh, that's so great, I went to the park across the street.
Oh god, yes. All the time.
I went to the restaurant like that's four blocks
sometimes
down.
I put my Google Home Hub Nest Hub down face down, because it's like, man, and you look at like you're hanging out in a bar and you're having a good time, and I think that guy's spitting right on you. you get out of there fast. It's like, we had no idea, did we, how dangerous it was. Now CES is finally officially off, thank goodness. For a while, CES had this nutty idea, well, we're going to do it, we just won't have as many people.
Imagine in the history books, you look back and like 2024, it's like the super spreader event of 2020, CES.
Oh, it could have been. Honestly, I don't know how we avoided that. There were people at CES with COVID-19. We know that now. I met some of them. It could have literally been. It was just in January. It could have literally been the beginning of the end. And somehow we dodged that one. 1 month later, who knows, right? So CES has announced, yeah, it's going to be all virtual. I'm sorry. We're sorry we even mentioned that other idea.
I mean, for any conference, I'd assume CES is the one that has the technology to make it all virtual. Yeah. You know?
We all went to RSA. When was that, Matthew? That was it February or March? I think it was. Did you go to RSA this year?
I did not go to RSA.
We had a lot of us went. We had a party late February. There's pictures in the hall of us at this party, and I'm thinking, oh my God, where's your mask? Are you shaking hands? Stop that.
Yeah. At this point, it's almost like you watch a movie from, you know, last year, and you're like, oh, crowd scene. No, not good.
Yes. It's terrifying.
Well, I think we're going to
I see, like, I watch a TV show and they're at a bar and I'm like, oh my God, I could never imagine. Oh. Why did I ever do this? I went to live theater. Everybody's singing.
Oh my
That's
God.
The worst possible thing.
King George spit on me. All right.
Yeah, I wonder something. I know Georgia Dow has also been on Twit, my friend who's a therapist. And even before COVID, she was talking about the explosion of children she would see in her practice that had, basically fear of people and social issues fitting
in.
We're
going to have PTSD from this. Yeah.
It's going to be terrible. People are going to be terrified to go out and socialize in person.
But don't you
think, cannot imagine that.
Or... And I don't know if there'll be there won't be like a day where they say, okay, all clear. Well, there, I don't know how that's going to work. They're getting close to a vaccine. Maybe there'll be a vaccine. Maybe March, maybe a year from today. I don't know. Will they just say, okay, it's fine, it's over? No, I don't know. And then I have a feeling that's either one thing or another. One, we'll just stay in our burrows and go, no, I don't believe you. I'm not going out there. Or we will flood out. And everybody will be like, let's party. And we'll be dancing in the streets.
Let's go to CES.
CES, baby. Rock and roll. Let's take a little break on that dystopian note.
Cheering for CES. Very dystopian.
CES. I'm never. No. You know what? Never again. Never going
I would
back.
Go to CES. That's how desperate I am to leave my house.
Oh, I don't. Jeez. We were thinking, after we liked CES so much, we were thinking of moving to Las Vegas. That's kind of now on the back burner a little bit. Do we have a promo, John? We had a great week this week. Let's take a look at some of the things that happened in the week gone by.
Previously on Twit.
Official unboxing of the LG Velvet. Literally opening the box, taking the phone out.
She's using a spudger. So
come on. Kind
of to open the box.
ASMR for people who like to struggle with boxes.
For those of you listening on the audio, Flo is wrestling with a cardboard box.
Windows Weekly.
The one thing that did leap to mind is, where's Satya Nadella on that list? Why is he not in that group? Shouldn't he be?
Today it is, you know, these four companies and some others collectively are personal computing. None of them stand up to the level of power that Microsoft had within the confines of the market, such as it was in the 90s.
Hands-on wellness.
We're going to look at more sanitation ideas as we try to fix the germs around COVID-19 and other little nasty critters.
Got the cheap one.
This week in Enterprise Tech.
Today we have Andy Purdy, Chief Security Officer for Huawei Technology USA.
We are absolutely all in with the idea of independent testing of products. Let's drill down and get experts to come in to the facilities of us and our competitors to analyze what we are doing and how we're doing it to make sure that our people are doing the right thing.
Twit, still essential.
Yeah. Wow. That's I'll have to see Andy Purdy's interview. So Huawei's not giving up. By the way, they just had their best quarter ever. They are now officially the number one seller of smartphones in the world.
Wow.
Beating Samsung and Apple. Apple's number three.
Huawei.
Huawei. And partly because I think there's a certain amount of patriotism in China. And people are going out and saying, good, I'm going to support Huawei. Talk about unintended consequences. They had a huge quarter. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. This is a tough time if you're doing some hiring. On the other hand, if you are currently trying to hire, kudos. Thank you. You're helping the economy. But you do have new difficulties. Housing Wire could relate. They needed to hire an ambitious reporter to cover news stories in the U.S. housing markets. Where did they go? They went to ZipRecruiter. That's how Housing Wire found Alexandra Roja. Alexandra never imagined she'd get a job reporting during COVID-19. She created a profile in ZipRecruiter, and this is where the magic happened. ZipRecruiter matched Alexandra to Housing Wire's reporter job because her degree and writing skills were a great fit for the role. Only 4 hours after Housing Wire posted their opening, 4 hours they got her application, thanks to ZipRecruiter that did the matching, and a few weeks later, Alexandra started her dream career. That's a happy story. We're not hiring today, but I tell you, when we do hire again, it will absolutely be ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is the best way to hire. Their automatic matching helps you find candidates fast. They help you sort through the applications. They never go into your inbox or your phone. They all go into the ZipRecruiter interface where it's easy to scan, rate, and pick the right hire fast. Hiring is so important now more than ever. Do it right. Let ZipRecruiter help you hire. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And by the way, we hired 3 or 4 of our employees recently through ZipRecruiter, and I will vouch for that. We got great applicants within just a few hours of the posting. Try it now absolutely free. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And if you're hiring, God bless you. Thank you. Get on ZipRecruiter. Get that right person. They're out there. They're waiting for you. They're thrilled. They can't wait to hear from you. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Still the smartest way to hire. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. It's sad. What? I heard something. Somebody wanted to say something? No?
Oh, I was just saying we're using them right now for our pack to try to find employees.
Isn't it a good way to hire?
Videographer over there. Yeah.
So thank you for hiring, honestly. And I bet the U.S. Digital Service is hiring, Matt Cutts.
We are hiring. If you are a product manager, engineer, or designer, we would love to talk to you because there's some really important ways that government is messed up right now and technology can help. And we need some help helping make things better. So please consider checking out USDS.gov.
USDS is a really exciting service. It was started, it seems like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, more than 4 years ago now, right?
Coming up on 6 years next week.
When Silicon Valley, it started with the ACA website, and Silicon Valley said, look, this is a mess. Let us help you. And they came out. I don't know. Is that when you went out, Matt?
I came out in 2016, so it had been around for a couple of years. There was a lot of people that I really trusted who were doing a tour of government service. I signed up for a 3 to 6 month tour, and I passed year 4 in June.
That's awesome. But you know what? They couldn't have a better guy running the place. I think that's so fantastic. Coders know you and love you and trust you. And you know, we always say to military folks, thank you for your service, but this is service too. This is a really important service. Thank you for your service, Matt. And thanks to everybody on your team.
It's a great team. And the thing that strikes me is you see the sort of stuff in the headlines like state unemployment insurance systems that are buckling under the weight of so many people who are applying for unemployment insurance. And, you know, these are often systems that are 10, 20, 30 years old. They're often running on mainframes. We recently did a collaboration with the state of New Jersey. Their site did not work on mobile phones, and most people are trying to recertify their weekly, you know, benefits on mobile phones. And so just, you know, some CSS styling later and a production push, and now it works much better for those 8 million people who live in New Jersey. And so it's absolutely the kind of work that everything from getting better data about COVID to, you know, helping veterans, it's really work that matters and can have a really big impact. And you can stay in front of a computer while you're doing your work. So
somebody in our chat room who wants to apply, do you need clearance, government clearance, to do it?
Right now, you do need to be a U.S. citizen, and you do have to be able to get security clearance. So, you know, marijuana, things like that are still illegal on the federal level. But, you know, if you're somebody who's straight edge, we would love to talk to you because you really can make a big difference.
How long do I have to be off the pot?
That's such a good question. I don't know. I've never done the pot. I've never done the Mary Jane. So I don't actually know how long it takes to work through the system.
Okay.
You'd have to test clear.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think I could figure that out. I'll find that out.
Have you been able to work on any of the unemployment systems that are running on COBOL?
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah, so we have engineers who are learning COBOL for fun. And it turns out the system that pays out Medicare, which pays out $2 billion a day, is 40 years old and has 14 million lines of COBOL and assembly. And it turns out that really needs to be upgraded to a more modern language.
And I'm going to be on Medicare in a couple of years. I hope you fix it by then.
Fingers crossed. I mean, that is a great collaboration with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So, you know, if you are an engineer who is unhappy and not feeling like you're having an impact right now, or, you know, you're doing the same thing that you did last month, you can really try something completely new and get hooked on the impact if you want to try the U.S. digital service.
Yeah. And how satisfying would that be to say, yeah, help fix Medicare? I mean, that makes a difference in people's lives in ways you just don't know. Now, but I do have to ask you, is this actually from a whiteboard at USDS?
yes. So we have not been into our office in Jackson Place. We're remote right now, but that's okay. We're able to do our work remotely as well. And, you know, This is the sort of thing. So Mac is, you know, like a Medicare administrative sort of middleman. And it turns out if you just even pull the data off of the mainframe, I'll try not to geek out too much. If you just pull the data off of the mainframe, then you can start to do real-time analytics. You can look for fraud. You can look at like, oh, on the first of the quarter, somebody does a bunch of billing. They find the most expensive procedure that gets reimbursed, and then they just submit that for the next 90 days. And like there's all kinds of ways where getting data – to a place where you can actually do real-time analysis in a way that most of the tech industry is used to. It's world-changing. Like go where you're rare. One technologist can really make a huge difference in the U.S. government right now.
Is it a custom database, or are they like running DBase too? What are they using?
COBOL database? It's running on ZOS. Yeah. Wow. So like we're learning things like vSAM and all this sort of stuff.
Oh my God.
But if you can insert in the right spot, you can just make a copy of it and use it, you know, in a secure location in the cloud or wherever. And then you can use all the regular sort of, like we are talking about a lot of data by government terms, but not a lot by tech industry terms. And so, you know, it's possible to make a pretty big difference.
Oh, this.
My Turbo Pascal 4 skills from 1995 are finally going to pay off.
You know, come on in. Waiting for come on, no, Pascal. COBOL's a snap. It's really a lot. Not so many semicolons and colons. It's much easier. Actually, I think it'd be kind of fun to learn COBOL and then and kind of dive into this and try to solve this problem, knowing especially that it makes a huge difference. You can write another Tetris. World doesn't need another Tetris. You could write one, or you could go to U.S. Digital Service, usds.gov/apply. And you get paid, right? I mean, it's not like you're volunteering. Oh, yeah. It's a job.
The government can pay up to $165,000 a year. So, what? I mean, yeah, it's, you know, if you're a GS-1510, which is welcome to acronym soup, but, you know, you learn all the acronyms, it is absolutely possible to make enough for a living wage. You know, it's, you know, that's good salary. Like, there's a lot of people who start at a much lower salary because of all the experience and the value that you bring. The government can pay its top rate for general service sort of employees. And then you, that's like, nice. You joked whenever I would not come on this week in Google that I was Colonel Cutts. But when I started at the Pentagon, I was the equivalent of 06. Like, I was a colonel.
Oh!
I had industry, you know, experience. And so it really does make a big difference. People don't have this technical experience in the government.
Do they call you colonel?
No.
Do you get to wear a uniform?
Did anybody salute you?
No, I'm an administrator, so I'm down here. But
no, administrators are important. Don't knock administrators. We need the administrators. Maybe you could get on Space Force later.
Can I tell you, we have a person who is involved with the U.S. Digital Service who is in the strategic group for Space Force. If you are interested in Space Force, come talk to us.
Nice. Like,
let's introduce you to Noah. Nice. I would love to introduce you to Noah.
Oh, Noah needs you.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be cool? Noah needs you more now, more than ever. Mm-hmm. There's a few Cortana engineers who probably could find some need some help right now. Microsoft is ending support for Cortana Mobile.
What?
Yeah, those. I have. I can add another. I have a pile of stuff that doesn't work anymore, including my Jibo robot. Now I'm going to add my Harman Kardon. A speaker that uses Cortana early next year, it'll stop responding. Cortana's turning into something completely different. It's more, it's kind of what happened to Bixby.
Oh, Bixby.
Bixby became RIP. Essentially an assistant to use Samsung phones with. Cortana is going to be a productivity assistant, kind of like the voice of Clippy. To be honest.
Aww. Yeah, I was about to say, Bixby seems like the sort of name for a sentient paperclip.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to give a human that name, would you? Yeah. So Cortana. Somebody called me a couple of weeks ago on the radio show and said, what happened to voice assistants? Like, wasn't that going to be the next big thing?
Yeah.
And they've just... Siri's going to be the next to go, right? Bixby, Cortana... Siri's got to be the next to go. Amazon and Google's going to fight it out, but they don't seem to be making much progress.
Yeah.
But they're just the butt of a joke now.
Everybody has ears and not enough people have headphones. I mean, maybe being in quarantine might be better because you could use a personal assistant and not immediately annoy everyone in your surrounding area or office.
Yeah,
but
that's the problem. That's the problem, isn't it? And now when I do it, I always kind of do this surreptitious Siri, which is you just press the button and you talk in a real low voice. Who won the World Series in 1928? Just real low voice.
And just says, whisper.
I don't know, but here's something I found on the web. Let's talk about, since we're talking about the cyber, let's talk about the election. I don't know if this
I've
is.
I've heard of it.
Yes. I don't know if this is. Yeah, I've heard there's maybe going to be one in November. I don't know.
Could be later.
Could be
We're
later.
Not sure.
Could be next year. I don't know. Could happen.
Could be 2023.
Some people say 2028. We don't know. There is a new election cyber surge. I actually asked you about this, Matt, before the show.
The most meaningless combination of words I've ever heard.
Election cyber surge to deploy hacker army for 2020 vote.
Oh. God. I hate it.
This is out of the University of Chicago. They are starting to pair up security experts with, because, you know, the elections, one of the things that's interesting about U.S. elections, they're all local, right, Brianna? Mm-hmm, yeah, they're not, yeah. The whole thing's,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's all run out of the state and the county. And it's one of the things that makes us harder to hack because it's so heterogeneous. Everybody has
one of the things I did when I went to turn in my papers on, like, when you're a candidate, you've got to go get enough signatures to get on the ballot. And from when I was a journalist, I always found the most valuable person to know when you're reporting on town affairs is the county clerk or the circuit clerk, people in that office. They will give you documents. And I was like, yeah, this seems like this should be a valuable person to know. So I took a day and I went to every single place in my district and dropped off my signatures. But this is the scary part. So I could not help but notice while I was there the kind of hardware that they had in the office, and it was a variety of operating systems. They had passwords taped right above it where you could just see it standing in the window. They had machines around Windows 95. And if you're trying to, this is Massachusetts. Like, we are one of the richer states in America, and it was a horrible, horrible, terrifying mess. So you could get a million like hacker armies. We're still gonna really have issues here.
Who pays? Is it the county that pays for the elections? Do they get federal funding?
So there often is
state
like
funding?
There's there's like Help America Vote Act have a, you know, is a thing that paid for a lot of election stuff. But it's also true that there's actually a startup called Voting Works that's trying to get certified as sort of this super low cost, nonpartisan, secure voting platform that's basically kind of using off the shelf hardware. But it's a patchwork. You've got machines that are really old in some cases.
Well, and then the money's stretched because now we've got to do vote by mail. We've got to do social distancing voting. I mean, there's a lot more expenses, which pulls money away from things like security, updating systems. It's not going to be good, I feel like. And of course, the president is doing everything he can to undermine the notion of a free and fair election. He would really like everybody to think that, because I think he sees the writing on the wall. And he would really like everybody to think that when he loses, he didn't really lose.
Yeah.
So that's not going to help. I just feel like we're headed in a bad direction. Does the USDS do anything with elections?
So most at the federal level, and we're mostly federal. That's DHS. They have the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, so CISA, and so they provide various assistance and things along those lines. So we've said we'd be happy to help if we can, and so we stand at the ready if there's anything we can do. But mostly that's Homeland Security and CISA.
And I would guess that's why this election cyber surge coming out of the University of Chicago, because they want to dispatch people to localities to help the states and local jurisdictions directly. So if you want to be an election cyber surge volunteer, you can actually go online.
What does cyber surge mean?
They're using a Google Doc for this.
Great. Love it already.
You can sign up. Here's a good question, though. Have you attended the DEF CON Voting Village?
I noticed that.
That's good.
That's a good, like, yes, no. If you have, then they're probably interested in you. So
Yeah. Well, that would show at least some interest in this topic.
Yeah. And is your handle Kirk or Rolex or Jaywan?
You must have at least 12 letters in your Twitter handle. Yeah, right. There is another area where White House is actually, and this is kind of a little small part of the federal budget, but they're actually causing some problems in the internet. There is something called the Open Technology Fund. This is a guy from the Open Technology Fund talking about the I don't know what this is. It's the it's the U.S. Agency for Global Media. It's Voice of America. They've got a new director at Voice of America who is apparently withholding funds, up to $20 million in funding approved by Congress for an internet freedom organization called the Open Technology Fund. Yep. The OTF is being forced to halt 49 of their 60 internet freedom projects because they just don't have any more federal funding. That affects, according to the head of the fund, about 80% of the group's work helping human rights and pro-democracy advocates, journalists, and others in 200 countries. Among other things, they help with Signal. They help with SecureDrop. They have a red team lab, which has audited and patched more than 2,100 privacy and security vulnerabilities in tools like SecureDrop. This is a small, I mean, $20 million doesn't sound like a lot, but this is a very important small group that's doing some, I think, significant things. And along with the defunding of Voice of America, they're losing a lot of their funding.
Richard Stengel, he's the former editor of Time, he wrote a book called Information Warfare, which I cannot recommend enough. And like you, Matt, he decided to go into government when the State Department invited him in to be a deputy. And he wrote a book about, as you know, former editor of Time, learning what Voice of America does, why we fund it, and why it's in our best interest.
Right.
And it was shocking. Because I had no idea how critical this was.
Like, I think
it's
like
a
you,
good use of taxpayer
like me, you assumed it was a propaganda
operation.
Right, exactly. It's not.
That's what I thought, and it's certainly not.
It's U.S. news delivered to countries where they don't get open, free news. Well, this is also kind of what they're doing with the internet. They fund development of Tor. They fund development of Signal. They distribute it to dissidents and journalists all over the world. So this is, I think, very important.
Yeah.
And the money's already been appropriated. That's what's kind of shocking. And the administration's just withholding it.
Yeah.
So just, you know, I don't think it's going to make, you know, the top of the news on any cable news channel anytime soon. But since this is our bailiwick, I think we should talk about it. I want to take a little break, and then I want to talk about NVIDIA and ARM.
Ooh.
I thought it was just rumors. Maybe there's more to it. There's some fire behind this smoke. Our show today brought to you by Barracuda. Man, did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? This came home to me. I read there was a wonderful piece in Bloomberg Businessweek last week about the Norsk Hydro attack, which happened last year. This is one of the biggest aluminum manufacturers in the world. They have factories in the U.S., Brazil, headquarters in Norway. They were brought down by ransomware. It was a big deal. You may remember the story when it happened. But what really stuck out for me is how they got attacked. It was a conversation hijack, an email from one of their customers sent to an internal address at Norsk Hydro to an executive. The email was sent with a legitimate attachment, a payload, got intercepted on its way. The payload got replaced with malware, which then got into the network, was opened by the executive. He expected this email. He expected this attachment. It wasn't the attachment he was expecting. 3 months later, so that for 3 months, the hackers were internal on the network, wandering around. 3 months later, boom, all of the computers shut down with a big warning saying, sorry, your data has been encrypted. Please contact us to negotiate the ransom. Cyber attacks come through the email. Now, put yourself in the shoes of that Norsk Hydro executive, the CISO or the CEO or the operations people, and think about your business and all your employees at home now. They're getting email on their systems from a variety of sources. Maybe they're going to be coming back to work at some point. One wrong click on the wrong email could cost you big bucks, could cost you customers, could cost you your reputation. Email is the number one vector for this stuff. And of course, the bad guys are taking advantage of this situation with coronavirus-related phishing attacks. They impersonate the CDC or the WHO, the World Health Organization. Researchers at Barracuda have observed a spike of 667% since February in COVID-related phishing attacks. And your employees, your poor employees, they're sitting there. They get an email that says, this is, maybe it came from you. It came from the boss. We just got a report from the CDC about how to protect yourself during quarantine. Open this up. Except it's not from the boss or from the CDC. It's from a bad guy. That's why you need Barracuda Total Email Protection. I know you know the name Barracuda. They are the number one guys in cloud-enabled enterprise-grade security solutions. We've used their boxes for email, for network protection, for data, for applications. They have a product that you will want to know about called Total Email Protection. If you're using Office 365, you can actually get a free threat scan of your Office 365 account completely free from Barracuda at barracuda.com/twit. Barracuda's Total Email Protection includes all-in-one email security. You also get backup, very important, right? Archiving, that's a legal requirement in many industries. Plus, you get AI-based protection from spear phishing, account takeover, and business email compromise. Most of these attacks now are targeted, and these guys are constantly evolving their attacks. You need protection that evolves at least as fast to protect you. You'll get an automated incident response. That's important. The faster you act, the faster you can limit the damage. You'll get an automated incident response that gives you options to quickly and efficiently address attacks. You also get training for your workforce, security awareness training, because after all, aren't your employees the first line of defense? So help them do a better job recognizing these problems. Barracuda can help by keeping these malware attachments and spear phishing attacks out of your email entirely. Uncover the threats hiding in your inbox. It's waiting for you free, a secure, free email threat scan of your Office 365 account. At least find out. I think what Barracuda figures is you, when you see how bad it is, you'll be calling them. Barracuda.com/twit. Don't hide your head in the sand. Find out. Barracuda.com/twit. At least there's help out there. The best kind of help. Barracuda, your journey secured. They're really good at what they do. We're very happy to be using them. SoftBank wants to get out of ARM.
So during the time we've been on this call, there's been an update in the TikTok thing.
Oh.
I was just watching it.
Yeah. What happened?
Microsoft just released a blog on their website that says Microsoft to continue discussions on potential TikTok purchase in the U.S. following a conversation between Microsoft's CEO and the president. Microsoft is prepared to continue discussions to explore a purchase of TikTok.
Oh. So I would like, maybe you should talk to them again. Don't. Talk about mixed signals.
It's been a long weekend for TikTok.
And Microsoft. So the president called and said, Satya, go ahead, buy it.
Something like that.
There was a great piece in the Wall Street Journal saying, does Microsoft want to get in this mess?
I mean, that's honestly the question. I can't imagine that Microsoft... I think the most notable example is that it wasn't Microsoft wasn't one of the four companies at the hearing on Wednesday.
Yeah, why
would
you?
I think it's in large part because they haven't been in the public eye, and having one of the most popular social media platforms right now, it is definitely going to put them in the public eye in a way they haven't been for two decades.
Oh my goodness.
There was a great tweet talking about how Microsoft, I think this was Casey Newton, is about to have a cradle to the grave operation because they get you. They start with Minecraft.
Yeah.
And then they
move you to TikTok.
Then they
get you with Excel.
Yeah.
And then you go to Hotmail.
Yeah. LinkedIn and then Hotmail all the way. Yeah. All the way down. Wow. Following a conversation, this is from Microsoft corporate blog. Following a conversation between Satya Nadella and President Trump, Microsoft is prepared to continue discussions. I don't even know what to say.
Imagine how many conference calls must have happened over the past 36 hours.
Today, Peter Navarro said, expect an announcement banning TikTok this week.
Time is a flat circle. Nothing makes sense.
And he also said, don't fall for the message from TikTok lobbyists and their puppet CEO. Oh, God. TikTok, it's such a threat to national security. Forget the hacking of the election. Forget all that. Forget putting a bounty on U.S. troops. We got to get TikTok. Dancing. Those dancing teens. I don't like them. I can't wait to hear what he's going to do to those K-pop stands. I just can't wait.
Oh, God.
BTS may never come in this shore across this again. No more.
The U.S. ceases to exist immediately.
So NVIDIA is apparently actually in active talks to buy ARM from SoftBank, but who cares? TikTok. I don't care anymore. Who cares? Samsung, we're gonna have a big event. I will be getting up way early on Wednesday, way earlier than I would like. Jason Howell join me 7 a.m. Pacific. That's 10 a.m. Eastern time for the Samsung, what do they call it? The unpacked, unlocked 2020. Apparently the new Samsung Note 20, the Z Fold, the second version of the Galaxy Fold.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're not giving up on that.
Is it going to fold like a fourth time?
This one folds to 11.
Well, it implies with a Z Fold that it might fold twice.
That would be insane.
It's got twice as many folded.
I guess the thing is you can't leave the house now to show off your latest Samsung gadget. You're just going to be showing it.
Dude, what's the point?
It means that it doesn't have to fit in your pocket anymore, so it could just be an accordion, you know?
Oh,
you
there
could
you
just
go.
Like hold it up and it's like a newspaper.
They showed, they had Samsung. a little teaser video that showed that, the Note, showed a new watch, new earbuds. There'll be a lot of stuff. We're going to cover it. We'll do a live stream as we are wont to do. Jason and I will be kind of the it's not really Mystery Science Theater. It's more like those old guys in the Muppets talking about the event.
Note 20. Have they already had 19 notes before?
What happened to the first? What happened to 18?
Telling me this product's going to fold. I agree.
I've been trying to fold my Note 10. The 72nd Primetime Emmy Awards. Going to stream it from your house. Jimmy Kimmel in his house.
For some reason, the notion of the Emmys happening is just baffling to me. I don't know. I guess maybe it's that I've been stuck inside for 5 months now, but just that popular culture still exists and will be broadcast.
It could be the last one because they're not making any new TV shows. So this is all pre-COVID content. It is appropriate.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What is the Emmys next year?
Next year. It's going to be some YouTuber. It's going to be PewDiePie.
It's gonna be all TikTok videos.
All Quibi. All Quibi. Actually, Quibi got a nomination or two.
Didn't Quibi get 10?
Yeah. That just shows how out of touch.
Isn't the golden arm legit. Lady, but it's just got 10 Jack times?
Bauer? It's just out of touch. Let's see what Quibi got nominated for.
I hope it's the golden arm.
It is appropriate
one.
That they're going to stream these because most of this stuff's from streaming.
The Mandalorian, yeah.
Yeah, Netflix, Disney+. Even Apple TV Plus. This is a long
PDF. You could just control PDF. F.
Control F. What am I saying? I even forgot. Quibi. Control F Quibi.
Query for Quibi.
Okay. Outstanding actor in a short form comedy or drama series. Free Ray Sean.
Is there a category for Quibi?
Yeah. They basically own that category.
They own it. They have 3 out of the 5 nominations.
They quibbed all over it.
They quibbed all over it.
Most Dangerous Game, isn't that the one where they hunt people?
Yeah, they made a little 7-minute at a time version of that.
Love it. Quick Bite.
Flipped, which is Funny or Die. Dummy, nominated for actress.
Have any of us downloaded Quibi and watched Quibi?
Only on day one.
Yeah.
Did you?
I like Quibi.
Beyond Day
and
One,
not
Brianna?
Just because my friend Simone has a show on there, Speedrun. That Fugitive show looks legit.
Wait a minute, Simone is in Speedrun?
She's the producer.
What?
Like, she's huge into that.
Oh, yeah. Now I love Quibi.
Yeah,
but I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's amazing. But it's not just that. Okay, I'm the world's biggest 24 fan, and I realize the show's problematic, but I still love it. And that Fugitive, the new Fugitive reboot with Jack Bauer, and they renamed CTU.
Okay, tell me how you watch it, though. Tell me how you watch it. Do you watch it this way or this way?
I watch it. I actually turn it as I go. Simone was telling us about this.
Yeah, like they produce
the,
it.
The complications as they shoot, they have templates that they have to follow and make sure that the blocking works in both orientations. So it's actually a really interesting video production pipeline.
So speedrun is actually people gaming, speedrunning.
Well, no, it's a show on Polygon. It's more general news. I wish it was speedrunning because I'm a speedrunner.
I would watch that. Yeah, that would be cool.
Portal.
Yeah.
So I downloaded it, to answer your question, Paris. The first day, you get a 3-month thing. That 3-month trial offer ran out. Apparently, they had millions of downloads, but once the 3-month trial ran out, 72,000 people subscribed, which is not a great number.
So I should get my Quibi in now before Quibi goes away.
Get it quick. They're going to, I bet you they get a lot of awards at these streaming virtual Emmys. Did you see Bernie Sanders wants to send you a mask? Bernie wants to send 3 free masks to every American. It's the Masks for All Act. I don't know if the government should spend $5 billion on producing masks to send to everybody. Maybe they should. I don't know.
I don't know. And I'm dubious of it just because I know a lot of people who still haven't gotten their stimulus checks.
Yeah, that would be maybe more important.
You know, if we're going to spend $5 billion in something and then a sizable percentage will not get it, seems a little problematic.
You could modernize a lot of government systems for $5 billion, let me tell you.
You talk about a gender gap. There are, in the United Kingdom, there are more CEOs named Peter than there are female CEOs in the UK. That's a weird stat, but I had to report it. More CEOs named Peter in the UK than there are females with any name running companies. That's all there is to say about that. Comcast lost 477,000 subscribers last quarter. People had enough.
Where could they go?
Well,
isn't that the whole thing?
What's weird is they lost 477,000 TV viewers. They gained 323,000 high-speed internet users.
Mm.
So I figured there probably it's a push, right?
Yeah.
Because they've been raising the cost of internet so much that they knew this was coming. Boy, there's still a lot of little stories here. I think I should probably mention, before we wrap up, the passing of Bill English. He was 91 years old. You may not know the name, but he built the first computer mouse. Doug Engelbart, his colleague at the Stanford Research Institute, SRI, came up with the idea. Engelbart was a fellow engineer. They made the mouse. He helped put on the demo, the demo to end all demos, where we saw for the first time a mouse, graphical user interface, Windows. Doug Engelbart, I had the pleasure of interviewing on the Screensavers 20 years ago, passed away in 2013. He brought that original mouse, which is just a big wooden box with rollers and stuff. But very cool. So the mother of all demos, which was December 9th, 1968, where we for the first time saw the computing that we would all be using eventually. Bill English, one of the creators, passed away at the age of 91. I thought we should mention it.
Yeah. Leah, before we end the show, can I tell your listeners about something really big with gaming that's happening tomorrow that's awesome?
Yes.
Analog makes what is the Rolls Royce of Super Nintendo and NES, basically it's not emulation. It's on FPGA chip. So it's basically a modern NES or Super Nintendo or Genesis that will work on a modern TV through HDMI.
But is it the same? Is it as good as?
It's really, really. So I'm a speedrunner. So like really small differences matter. It is the best way to play these for most people. They've got something coming out tomorrow, which is the Analog Pocket. It is a $200 top of the line Rolls Royce Ultimate Game Boy that will play Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance games, and it has adapters coming out for it for Neo Geo Pocket, Sega Game Gear stuff, and that goes on sale tomorrow at 8 o'clock Pacific time and 11 o'clock my time. And get your order in if you're interested in this at all. The last time they sold their Super Nintendo, you would buy it for $500 on the day it came out, and then you could sell it on eBay almost instantly for like $1,500. They but don't make any of
these. Do I have to have my old cartridges?
You do. You do.
You could also buy a bunch of old cartridges in a sack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Or they, if you like particular games, they have emulation cartridges you can get on Etsy. Ooh. Like Circle of the Moon is one of my favorite games. You can just get a reproduction cartridge for $10.
I have the ET cartridge, but it's unfortunately for an Atari, not for this. Yeah, this will work with this has an Atari Lynx cartridges.
It will. Yeah. And it also has something to hook it up to your television. So I'm the eighth fastest player in the world. Super Mario Brothers 2 with Princess Peach.
What?
There's a version of it on Game Boy.
Why did you never tell me this?
She
tweets about this all the time. Yeah. I knew that.
So there's a version of it that comes out.
A lot of bells in Animal Crossing.
Right. Now, there's a version of it for Game Boy Advance called Super Mario Advance. I can't wait for this because I'm going to finally get the world record on this with Super Mario.
Oh, my God. Can you stream that?
Yeah, because it'll go through HDMI, right?
So you can stream it on Twitch? What are you going to do?
Probably, yeah. You have to download proof for them to verify the speedrun. So
I clearly should be. See, I was following Space Cat Gal. Little did I know. Brianna Wu on the Twitter, and I could be reading about all this stuff. That's cool. How much is that pocket going to set me
$200.
Back? That's nothing.
It's a reasonable investment. You're getting really good hardware.
I think it's so cool that they do an FPGA. Yep. So it really is an emulation. They do all of the features of the Nintendo chipset in the FPGA.
Yeah, that's correct. But I tell you, as someone that grew up on this stuff and is very sensitive to the smallest differences, like in speedrunning, a tenth of a second is a lot of time. And I can tell you their emulation of it is really, really, really close to the point I can barely tell. So I think for almost anyone, this is going to be a way to play these games.
Ladies and gentlemen, stand back. Here we go. Ready Player One. 10 minutes and 17 seconds.
Yes, there we go.
Of Super Mario 2 All-Stars Princess Only as speedrun by Brianna Wu.
Wow.
This is easy stuff. This is easy. This isn't hard.
I should move ahead in the video. When does it get hard?
Probably towards the end, yeah.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
So how many millions of times did you play this game?
I've been playing this game for 25 years.
It's in the it's in your fingers.
This is where you do the vine jump and leap above the whole board. Wow. So you get to skip and save like 5 minutes right here. You have to time it to, it's a 3-frame space for you to be able to do the vine jump. Oh, see, I lost on there. Now up and over.
That's amazing.
Yep.
All right, I got to see this.
No, I screwed up big towards the end.
So you could have done better? You mean this?
Yeah.
You could be the seventh fastest if you do it again? All right.
Yep.
Wow. So I'm just thinking, this is all muscle memory at this point for you, right?
No, it's deeply strategic. Like, watch this. There's a 1-frame buffer here for you to do it. Then you're going up here. Watch this. Okay. Then you clip him right there.
If you really thought about this, we could have had the eighth fastest Super Mario speedrunner in Congress.
Uh-huh. You deliberately died?
I did because I had one hit and I need it to go through. So it was you have to get 5 hits on Toad.
Little did I know how great you were. Congratulations. That's amazing. Thank you, Brianna Wu. We didn't say anything about Rebellion Pack because our lips are sealed.
I can't even talk about it, so, yeah.
But what should people do? Should they go to that website?
Yes, if you want. Well, Rebellion website is not up yet deliberately because it tells everything that we are doing. But if people believe in what I'm doing and the work I did as a candidate for Congress, send me a DM. I'll send you the form. If you want to support us, we would certainly appreciate that. We're working with a lot of big people. We've raised a lot of money. We've got a big team. This is going to make a big impact on the 2020 election and beyond.
I'm going to cry. Thank you. I'm so thrilled.
I can't stay out of the game.
I'm so thrilled that you're going to do this. That's so great. We'll find out next time you're on. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
I'll be too busy playing, you know, Mario, but I'll try to look up and listen and pretend I'm interested. Thank you, Brianna. It's good. You're going to do good work. I'm very excited. You wanted to do this. I know you wanted to do this. I'm so glad you did it. That's great. Huh. No more? Nothing more to be said? Mm-mm. Paris Martineau, she is gainfully employed at The Information, where she covers. Are you covering anything particular or just?
I'm covering Amazon.
Oh, I love it. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Biggest company. It's a whole world in and of itself.
Now, one of the things that The Information is so good at is they've got the leakers in there. They're listening and they can hear what's going on. You got some good sources inside the company.
Yeah, slowly but surely, building the network. If you or exciting. Someone you know works with any of the many parts of Amazon,
hit me up on DM.
Or hit me up on Signal. All my contact information is in the bio.
That's the best way to do it, isn't it, Signal? That's what I use when
I agree.
Anybody
you can
to.
Just kind of set everything to be deleted in 24 hours and whatnot, so you don't have to worry about any kind of digital trace.
If I were doing anything at all fishy, I would do it that way, but I'm not.
Not even anything fishy. If you just don't want, I don't know.
No.
Let's say somebody sues you in the future for some dumb reason and gets discovery.
Yeah. Or you don't want Jeff Bezos breathing down your neck. Just use Signal. Be safe. Thank you, Paris. It's so good to see you. Congratulations on
always wonderful
job.
To be on.
It's great. And my old buddy, Colonel Cutts. Damn, I love you. I'm so glad to see you and that you're thriving and doing well. And are you in Washington, D.C.? Is that where you're?
I am. I'm in Washington. I'm near DuPont Circle.
Wow.
And, I would love to have some more technologists come join us in D.C.
USDS.gov/apply. Mm-hmm. Stop smoking marijuana for a couple of days and get on over there.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Down. There'll be plenty of time later.
Got a lot of mainframes that need help.
Mainframes. COBOL kids. Let's do it. Let's all do it.
Mainframes, not Mary Jane.
That's it.
I love it.
Thank you, Matt. Man, it's so great to see all three of you. What a fun show. I love it. Thank you. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We do TWiT every Sunday, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. That's 2130 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch us put this together live, including the pre-show where we let our hair down a little bit, go to twit.tv/live. There's audio and video streaming there. You can also get on-demand versions of everything we do at our website, twit.tv. We're on YouTube. You can ask Cortana for the next week to play the latest version of This Week in Tech, or even stream TWiT live. Echo and Google will do it also. Best thing to do, though, subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get the latest edition the minute it's available, and it helps us a lot. Gives us the confidence to keep on keeping on. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Another TWiT.
This is amazing. Bye-bye.